is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He has dropped. It is Lorenzo Alexander. Oh, baby, what a hit. Fire to the far sideline. It is picked off. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Stephon Gilmore.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
I don't know if I should start the show by crying or being excited or what here. My last day after the fortnight of filling in for John Murphy.
Means Sal Capaccio
here
fun.
With Donald Jones. What's up?
It means we have to have some fun today.
We do. We're going to have some fun today. But, of course, I'll be back at some point, I think.
Yeah.
You know, unless I didn't completely screw everything up for everybody out there. And they're like, we don't want that dude back anymore.
I don't think that happened.
You don't think so? I think we're okay, right?
I think it's been okay for the last 2 weeks.
I think we've had a fun 2 weeks. I've enjoyed it, Donald. Thank you very much. You've made my job a lot easier here. And I know people have really – I've gotten a lot of great feedback that people have loved hearing you know, you speak about some certain topics that we've brought up, so I appreciate it. Murph did a great job at the Super Bowl last week, of course, but I've been here filling in for Murph last week and this week. Today's my last day filling in. You'll hear from me, of course, still on WGR Sports Radio 550 and along the way here on this program or elsewhere, I'm sure. But let's have some fun today and kind of wrap things up in style with a plethora of kind of things and topics I want to get to, Donald, but really want to hear from you out there today. What do we want to hear from you? And we're going to give the forum back to the fans today at 803-0550, 888-550-2550. What I mean is, if you've missed anything at all over the last 2 weeks that you want to talk about, you want to call about, you have any questions about the Bills, free agency, the draft, the team, all that kind of stuff, feel free today. Put our producers to work. Make them answer those phones. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. But Donald and I also are going to get into a pretty cool topic, I think, Donald. It's a place we can take this a lot of different ways, and we're going to get a lot of great feedback on Twitter, and we're going to get some calls on this, I think. And that is NFL rules and procedures. And what I mean by rules and procedures is not just typical rules on the field, like other things that the NFL can do and procedures and how they operate. Everything from, you know, number of teams in the league to how holding calls should be administered, whatever. Doesn't matter. All that stuff. I've been thinking all week, and we've been bouncing some things back and forth all week, and today I think is the day to really get into it, about what you'd change about the league. Mm-hmm. What you'd change about the league. What you think would be beneficial for this league. And the reason I came up with this idea in my head this week, Donald, is I have been listening, and I agree, by the way, to the huge outpouring of frustration of NHL fans about the NHL offsides rules and the review that's been going on and how people want to change that. And I know my colleague at WGR, Jeremy White, talks a lot about the 3-2-1 point system and how that should be changed. And this morning they had Craig Custance on, and he even said that he believes that should be changed. There's a lot of things that need to be changed, that can be changed throughout sports. In baseball, you saw this new rule they're going to have, right?
Yeah, we're in extra innings. They want to start somebody off at second base, right?
Right, and to speed the game up so that maybe you get a run or two early on in extra innings so we don't go 14, 15, 16 innings, right?
Let me tell you, baseball games are long, man. And I play baseball. I cannot sit and watch a full baseball game. It's tough for me even in the playoffs. Now, you get later into September, into October, I will watch a game. Maybe one game if it's, you know, two good teams playing, but for the most part, I can't watch it. So anything they could do to speed up a baseball game, I'm all for it, man. Put a runner on third base, put a runner at home plate everywhere, man. Just speed up the game.
Well, that's an idea for baseball. What about football? What things would you do to help football, to change the game for the better? That's what we'd like to hear from you today. Whether it's something dealing with a specific penalty or replay or in-game operation or in-game, procedure or just league procedure, league rules, all those kinds of things. That's what's on the table today. I have some things I want to go over with Donald and with you today that maybe you can chime in on and say, hey, you know, that's something that I'd like to see change that maybe you haven't even thought about. 803-0550 is the number, 888-550-2550. Also today, we are going to speak with Brian Mitchell. You remember Brian Mitchell? He was a really good football player.
I do remember him.
Eagles and Redskins, mm-hmm. Right? And he played in the early 2000s for the Philadelphia Eagles, which meant that he played on a team that Sean McDermott was on the coaching staff, and David Culley was on the coaching staff.
Did he play with T.O.?
That's a good question. I thought about that. I don't think he did, because he was gone in like 02 or 03, and I don't know if T.O. went to the Eagles until 04. They may have crossed paths for 1 year.
Okay.
So we'll look it up and ask him. We'll look it up. He's coming up at the bottom of this hour, actually, at 12:30. But if he did, we certainly will, you know, ask him about, you know, playing with T.O. and whether or not he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. But we'll get that as well. You know, David Culley, it's interesting, because we're going to ask Brian Mitchell about him. He was a quarterback's coach at Southwest Louisiana. And Brian Mitchell, the reason we're bringing him on, he was at Southwest Louisiana. He played quarterback. Brian Mitchell moved from quarterback in college to running back in the NFL. But his quarterback's coach in college was the Bills' current quarterback's coach, David Culley. But David Culley went to the NFL and became a wide receiver's coach.
Right.
So, I'll ask you, Donald, what do you feel, if you were a player and you saw a coach who switched positions as a coach, but he'd had a lot of experience, maybe he'd been coaching running backs, and then all of a sudden he coaches receivers. Do you have any less respect for him in any regard?
Ooh, all right. So when I got here to Buffalo, I've never had a true wide receiver coach. I never had somebody who actually played the position. We all know that most coaches, or a lot of coaches, especially in the NFL, never really even played football. They just grew up, you know, their dads were coaches, and so they were kind of grandfathered in.
Yep.
And we know it's a boys club, and a lot of these guys never played. So for me, I never had like a true wide receiver that ended up coaching me that could really teach me the ins and outs of playing wide receiver. My coaches here, and it's not knocking those guys, but they were, one of them was a tight end, I believe, and the other one was a DB. And so it's not like something that's uncommon when you see coaches that played a certain position and coach a different position, or you see coaches that coached a certain position their entire career and now they're coaching something else. These coaches, quite frankly, move around. Like, that's what they do, you know.
And I think personally, a good coach is a good coach.
A good coach is a good coach.
If you know how to coach the game, coaching, teaching, anything in that realm, to me, is about relating to people.
It is.
That's what it is. Now, he may have to gain more of your trust, as does he know what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. But once he does, I think as long as you relate to people and you can communicate what you want, I think, to me, that's the best coaching.
Now, here's the problem in the NFL. The problem is that they don't teach in the NFL. The coaches don't teach.
What do you mean by that?
A lot of coaches don't teach the actual position. All they do is tell you the plays. Like, this is the play. So you get into mini camps, mm-hmm. all they're doing is trying to make sure you know the plays, you know the audibles, you know what you're supposed to know on the field. But they're not teaching the ins and outs, the intricacies of the position. Like Asanjay Lal taught these wide receivers how to run routes and things like that. They don't do that. Most coaches in the NFL don't do that. And so that's why it doesn't really matter if these coaches move from position to position, because their job really is to just know the plays.
Now, is that because they feel that everybody who's at that level should already know all the technical aspects that they don't need to teach? Is it because there's no time to teach because of the way that the practices are structured and how much interaction you have? Why don't NFL coaches, and by the way, I completely agree with you. As a former high school coach, I used to go to NFL and college camps and things like that and watch. We did way more teaching, way more teaching at those grassroots levels than these guys. But I would expect that, because at that level, you would think maybe they already know what they're doing.
Right. I guess that's what they think. I guess when you get here and when you get to the pros, they feel like you're supposed to know how to play the position. You've been playing it your entire life. You played it for 3 or 4 years in college. And when you get here, you're supposed to know. And if you don't know, you better just learn trial by error, mm-hmm. you know, on the field. You have to learn how to run routes and things. And quite frankly, do they have the time? In practice, no, they don't have the time. But the people who take it the most, like, take it serious, the coaches that take it serious will take the time. They will make time and say, listen, I want to really teach you how to run routes, and we need to do it at this time when we really don't have anything going on. Just like guys are watching film, we need to sit down and talk about running routes. We can watch mm-hmm. film on you running the route, then we can go out on the field and actually work on it. Just like they were doing with Cardell Jones, the last coaching staff, how they were taking the extra time to teach him the position and playing quarterback. Coaches need to do a lot more of that. But coaches at this level, a lot of them don't care. Like, a lot of them, they don't have the time during the season to really teach. And they're really just trying to cover themselves.
Sure.
There are a lot of coaches that just want to cover themselves and make sure that they have a job. And so all I need to do is make sure you know the plays. And that's all that matters.
Well, I would say, though, that if you do have those coaches who are willing to take more of a time to be teachers and devote themselves to helping out with all the little technical aspects, I would think it would help. I mean, right?
It would help.
Especially
it would.
Guys. When we always hear, Donald, about developing a guy, developing a quarterback, right. developing a wide receiver, whatever. Isn't that the development?
It's supposed to be the development. I think, you know, a lot of times the players have to actually develop in the offseason. Like when you might go back and actually learn from a wide receiver coach or learn from a quarterback coach, a guy that can teach you different things. And that's when they expect the players to learn, because when you get in the season, they just don't have the time to really teach you the things that they need to teach you. But they do need to take more time in teaching these guys. You have, especially at the wide receiver position for me, and quarterback, all positions, quarterback, wide receiver, DB, these positions that really stand out when a guy doesn't know his technique and is – So you look at the wide receiver position, and you have so many guys that come out every year that run 4.3, 4.3, 4.3, 4.3. That's all we talk about.
Not uncommon.
This guy just blazes 40, right. and he ends up going in the first round. This guy doesn't know how to play football. Like, he doesn't know how to run routes. He doesn't know how to lean on DBs. He doesn't know how to use his head and use his eyes and all of that stuff. And now those are the things that you have to teach. If all he knows how to do is run fast, how far is that going to get him, and how much better does that make your team? It's not going to make your team much better if all you have is a guy that can run down the field. So why wouldn't a coach teach a guy how to run routes and be savvy in route running, or how to read a defense as a quarterback? Why wouldn't they teach him that? I just don't get it.
Right.
But I understand that they don't have the time during the season, but they need to make more time.
No doubt about it. And here's the other thing, though. I will say that one of the differences between going from the lower levels to the higher levels, from high school to college to the NFL. As you grow up the ladder, and especially the NFL, of course, it is your job. They also expect you to do on mm-hmm. your own when you get home. When you're in high school, the only time that you're really teaching football is on the football field.
Right.
You're not expecting that kid to go home and run routes in his backyard, you know, because that's his job. He's not getting paid. Exactly. He's got homework. He's got history class. He's also playing probably trumpet in the band, mm-hmm. and he has to go to a concert or something.
Exactly.
In college, they have classes as well, but of course it's a lot more dedicated to, you have more football time, stuff mm-hmm. like that. When you get to your level, to the NFL level, I would assume part of the reason that coaches may say, look, I'm teaching you the plays, it's partly up to you to go home and work on some of those finer things, like however you do that. You know why? You're getting paid. Mm-hmm. Like, this is your job every day. When yeah. you leave the facility, your job doesn't end necessarily. I mean, I go home, my job goes with me because I have to write columns, I have to watch film on the Bills, I have to do a lot of things. It's my job. It's my livelihood. It's what I get paid to do. For NFL players, for baseball players, whoever it is, when it's your job, whatever it gets, you get paid to do it, when you're away from the facility, you're expected to still work on the things that make you better at your job when you go back the next day.
Right.
Not necessarily in high school. So maybe when you get up to those levels, that's also why coaches say, that's not on me, dude. Like, I can help you a little bit. I can show you some things. You got to do that mm-hmm. on your own to work out. Go to the field house after practice and work with a couple DBs, and then you can work better off getting off press coverage. I only have an hour of practice, and we don't even have time to do that in an hour.
Right. Now, the fact still remains that if you have a guy that hasn't learned what he's supposed to learn in the offseason, well, guess what? Your team is not any better because he didn't do what he's supposed to do in the offseason. He's still technically on your team. He's still getting paid a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So now it's your job to teach that guy. So as a coach, you're the wide receiver coach. You're the DB coach. Do your job. Just like you expect the players to do their jobs, I'm sorry. Your job is, as the coach, not just to teach the plays, but teach me what I'm supposed to know about the position. And that's my issue with these coaches moving from position to position. And I understand for a coach himself, it helps out on their resume to say, I coach quarterbacks, I coach wide receivers, I even coach DBs, I even coach linebackers. You know, it helps out. And that's what goes to show that everybody is all out for themselves in this league. It's all about trying to make yourself look good. It's all, the players want to get paid. The coaches want to move up and get paid a lot more money.
Become a coordinator, become a head coach.
Exactly.
All those kinds of things. I do think, though, Donald, to have a better knowledge base of everything around the team as you get older and you have more experience around the different positions, I think it does help you in regards to how you deal with the room, the offensive staff, the entire staff. If you understand, if you've coached, let's say you go from coaching O-line to tight ends, mm-hmm. and which isn't a big shift, but it's a little bit of a shift. At least when you get in an offensive meeting, you understand what the O-line coach is saying
right.
about how his guys have to do certain things, and you can fit it into what your guys. maybe when you're younger and you've only had the experience of that one certain position, you're only looking out for you, and you can become a little problematic or selfish in the room thinking about only your guy, right. Which I know is what they do a lot of times, but at least it gives you a broader sense of what happens with the team. And I think that could be good for any team.
Yeah, I think that could be good. I can also make an argument that, you know, you can do a lot of things good, but you can't do anything great because you're doing so many different positions.
Right.
And you might be okay at coaching line, but if you end up coaching one position your entire life, well, guess what? I'm the best special teams coach
right,
in this league because right. That's all I've been doing.
You know what's funny? You bring that up about special teams. John Harbaugh was a special teams coach before he got the Ravens job, and he was a good coach right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe one of the reasons he was a good coach right away is because as a special teams coach, he dealt with everybody on the roster. He didn't just deal with quarterbacks. He didn't just deal with defensive backs. Every day at practice, he dealt with guys who played defensive line and running back and linebacker and quarterback or whatever. You know, right. Maybe quarterbacks aren't playing special teams, but you get the point. Or maybe they're holders, so they have to. But I think that also can really help you, that a special teams coach actually has more interaction with the entire roster
right.
than any other coach on staff. Isn't mm-hmm. that true other
that
than the head
coach? That's the truth, because there are so many guys that make the team just because of special teams.
Right.
There's so many guys. I mean, if you're not a number one, you're going to be playing special teams in some form or fashion. And some of even the number one guys, the number one wide receiver, the number one running back might have to play some special teams.
Right.
So the special teams coach, yes, he has interactions with everybody across the team. Now, when you look at – I don't know how it works in hockey, but you look at – let's take basketball, right? You wouldn't take Patrick Ewing and say, I want you to coach guards.
Right.
You know, so why is it in football – that all of these guys move from position to position?
Well, it's a good point. It's interesting. But I guess football's more of a sport where they can – I don't know. I think they cross over a little bit more, a little bit differently,
mm-hmm.
because a big man's way different than a point guard, no doubt right. about it, right? They do cross over a little bit. But it's a good point. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, there are a lot of guys that do that around the league. We've seen
oh,
it.
Yeah.
Whether they go from college to NFL or team to team, mm-hmm. and they're going to change positions, and a lot of times that's how they do get – have an ability to rise up the ladder. But anyway, interesting topic there. We could talk about that. And that piggybacks on what we brought up yesterday, Kyle Shanahan calling plays.
Yeah.
And how much, if you're just focused on one group, you're not the CEO, you're not interactive with everybody. On the team. I'm going to be very interested to see if Sean McDermott calls plays or if Leslie Frazier calls plays. I don't think he's necessarily decided, or if he has, he hasn't told us. But at least he has a guy in Leslie Frazier who's done it before. He's been a head coach. Personally, I would love to see Sean McDermott be more of the CEO mm-hmm. and have Leslie Frazier call the defense under his guidelines.
Right.
This is my defense. You call it that way. I think that's the better way to go.
That's the best way to go. You know, this is what I like to see in a defense. This is my defense. I want you to call the defense.
Right.
Not necessarily exactly how I call
sure.
it, but these are the guidelines. This is what I like to see.
And I'll be
field.
On the headsets in case
right.
you know,
and
we can talk.
If you do something wrong, I might step in and say, I don't want to do that, you know,
right.
So just understand that. And for Coach McDermott, he's a young coach, and he's going to have to step in front of a guy like Leslie Frazier, who's experienced and been
right.
doing it for a while, you know. And so it takes a strong individual to be able to step in as a rookie head coach, to step in front of a guy who's been coaching defense but also been a head coach in this league and say, no, we're not doing that, you know. So I'm when you look at Sean McDermott, it seems like he can get that done.
Yeah,
but it also seems like he has the right approach of just hiring the right people to do their jobs.
Speaking of that, he has completed his coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills have finalized their coaching staff under Sean McDermott. There are 26 coaches total. I believe under Rex Ryan, there were about six more. They're like 32. So quite a bit of a difference there when you think about it. But there are 26 coaches. Excuse me, on the Bills coaching staff. Sean McDermott has completed his list, and that included three hires basically made official yesterday. One is the offensive assistant, Chad Hall. As I said a couple weeks ago, we knew, and there have been reports, Chad Hall would join the staff. He's a young guy. He's never coached before, so you didn't think he would be a position coach. He's not. He's an offensive assistant. Good for him. Foot in the door. We'll see what he can do to help out whatever Sean McDermott asks, on that side of the ball. On the defensive side, Jim Salgado has been hired as the defensive assistant as well. And then bringing back the assistant to the head coach, who also was for Rex Ryan, is Laura Young. So those are the three coaches that came aboard yesterday that were made official. Chad Hall, offensive assistant. Jim Salgado, defensive assistant. Assistant to the head coach, Laura Young. The only other ones, besides Laura Young, who was an assistant to Rex Ryan, who remains an assistant now to Sean McDermott, Danny Crossman is the only main on-the-field football coach who has been retained on this staff, the special teams coordinator. Other than that, the head strength and conditioning coach and his staff have all been retained. Eric Ciano, Dan LaBird, Mark Lecker, I hope I said that right, Losher, I'm sorry if I say Mark's name wrong, I apologize, Hal Luther, and Jason Osvart. So those are the people who've been retained. For a full list of that, go to BuffaloBills.com. Chris Brown has a write-up. You can also go to WGR550.com. I've written it up as well. But this is a brand-new coaching staff in all respects, Donald, except for Danny Crossman and the strength and conditioning staff and an assistant to the head coach.
It is, I mean, it's something that doesn't really shock me, you know, because new coaches, when they come in, they want new coaches. They want their own staff, and they also want their own players, you know. So even if Sean McDermott said, listen, I want to gut this, and I'm not saying that he's doing this, but if he did say, I want to gut this whole thing, that wouldn't shock me because that's what coaches do. They want their own guys that they feel fit their system. Now, at the end of the day, we know it's a business. You can't just gut everything because you have guys under contract and so on and so forth. But they're, like we've talked about, they're going to evaluate everyone on this team, just like he evaluated all of the coaches and decided who he wanted to bring back and who he wanted to let go. He's going to evaluate everyone on this team and decide, I can work with this guy in my system or not. And that's, I would think that's what they're doing right now.
803-0550, 888-550-2550. All right, what rules or procedures in the NFL would you change to make the league better? We've already had several Twitter responses come our way. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Here we go. Let's start with Justin, who says, and by the way, we want you to call on this and tell us what you think about some of these or come up with your own. Justin says, no penalty for a kickoff out of bounds. Less hitting that way and fewer touchbacks. Major setback is spotting the ball, though. So I don't know. Let's see. Less hitting and fewer touchbacks. So no penalty for kicking out of bounds. He's saying if you allow them to do that, we would have less of the problems that occur on kickoffs, which result in injury.
So no penalty.
No penalty on a kickoff out of bounds. So if I kick it off and it rolls out of bounds at the 20, you're getting it at the 45.
Right.
Said, nope, just let it go there. Let it go to the 20. If they kick it off out of bounds, kick it off out of bounds. Right. You have to take it where it is.
I guess it's.
You all right with that? I don't know.
I'm
I think
right
it might. I don't know.
I think
like
it puts more pressure on the kicker, knowing that if I kick this ball out of bounds, we're going to get it. They're going to get it at the 40.
That's right.
Like, this game is really – it's the pros. And so it's all about pressure, right? Like, everybody has pressure on them to do the right thing. And so, you know, we're going to get into what I think the rules should be or what rules or what needs to be changed about the NFL. And it's going to come down to pressure for me. And I talked about this a lot on this show. But for the kickers – I like the fact that, listen, if you kick the ball out of bounds, they're going to get it at the 40. That's pressure for you to get your job done.
Let's go to another one. This is from Tommy. I like this suggestion. Get rid of the automatic first down on an illegal contact by a DB. Just make it a five-yard penalty. If it results in a first down, it results in a first down. So get rid of the auto contact or auto first down on
illegal contact.
Illegal contact.
So illegal contact is different than pass interference. For me, I don't like the fact that pass interference, you get the ball, you know, it's a spot foul, right? So they can just throw
Let's talk about that one in a second, but let's just say for a second before we get to that, this is just the, hey, he bumped him too far down the field.
It's automatic.
Should it be an automatic?
Down.
It is right now an automatic first down.
I'm okay with that.
I don't like it. I agree with this. It makes it way too easy to get an easy first down because basically any penalty on the defense is pretty much an automatic first down, except for offsides, I think, or illegal procedure, a pre-snap penalty. Any penalty during the play that I can think of is an automatic first down. Why? You know, if it's first and 10 and you commit a five-yard penalty, just make it first and five.
Well, you know what? DBs need to get better at what they're doing. And maybe their coaches should coach them up a lot better.
That's maybe what they should do.
Receiver,
I know. You're
so
the wide.
Of course
you're
going
to defend that. So what do you think about the pass interference rule? Would you rather go to the college rule?
I'd rather go to the college rule, 15 yards. I don't like the spot foul.
As a wide receiver, you don't even like it.
As a wide receiver, I don't even like it. I don't like the fact that you can throw the ball up to just throw a bomb, and if it's a pass interference on the one, they get the ball on the one. I don't like that. You know, didn't that happen in the Super Bowl?
Yeah, but it was in the end zone, and he definitely interfered. You got to do right if you're in the end zone. So that's a tough one. So, but I agree. I tend to agree on this. I go back and forth. you know, if you throw a bomb and the guy is wide open and a guy in the DB just says, I got beat. He just drags him down.
Right.
I mean, you basically, then you only give him 15 yards when he should have had a 40-yard reception. That's tough for me to swallow. But I agree. Sometimes ticky-tack calls, and you're like, I can't believe they just gave him a free 40 yards.
A free 40 yards. I can't believe they just gave him the ball at the one-yard line
right.
for that ticky-tack call. Like, yeah, I think it should only be a 15-yard penalty. Automatic first down, 15-yard penalty.
803-0550, 888-550-2550. We got a lot more here to talk about on this to come your way as far as the rules and procedures of the NFL. But before we do that, Brian Mitchell at 1230, which is on the other side of this break. Brian played for the Redskins and the Eagles, but he was also coached as a quarterback by Bills quarterbacks coach David Culley at Southwest Louisiana. So he's going to tell us a little bit more about the coach the Bills are getting to tutor their own QBs here on the John Murphy Show. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones, we'll take a timeout. We'll be back after this.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, welcome back to the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, right here from One Bills Drive in our One Buffalo studio. Sal Capaccio here today, filling in for Murph. Donald Jones with me as well, former Bills wide receiver. And on the Subway Fresh Take hotline, Subway Eat Fresh, we have former NFL running back return specialist Brian Mitchell. He joins us today to talk a little bit about his former coach and now current Bills quarterbacks coach, David Culley. Brian, it's Sal, it's Donald. Thank you very much for joining us here today.
Oh, no problem. How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Thanks a lot. What are you doing these days, man?
I do a little radio and TV here in D.C. and do a lot of motivational speaking and play golf as often as I can.
Play golf. So you're not out at Pebble Beach this week, are you?
Nah, I went to Pebble actually before the Super Bowl. I do a tournament out there, Athletes Betters. Every year we do a three-day tournament prior to Super Bowl week, and I flew to Houston and hung out there all week, and I've been recuperating.
Recuperating, you know, from the week,
like,
huh?
Oh, yes, man. It's not like when I was 20-something, I could just do it and keep moving. At 48 years old now, it takes me a little time to get back.
Hey, I mean, you still. I've seen some pictures. You look like you could still play a little bit, Brian. I'm telling you that.
Looks are deceiving.
Hey, Brian, you were a quarterback in college, right? I mean, how did that transition happen from you from quarterback to running back and return specialist?
Well, you know, being that I was only 5'10" and a half, I figured if I went to the NFL, I was going to have to change positions. And we were in an offense in college where I did run the ball a lot. I ran the ball in my 4 years well over 700 times and for, 47 touchdowns, over 3,000 yards. So I felt the transition to running back wouldn't be that big of a difference. Just learning how to take the ball from the running back, which I handed the ball to guys many a times and seen it. So, you know, it was easy for me because once I had the football in my hand, I was ready to go.
Brian, we're looking at pictures right now, man. Like, back in the day, y'all really had some old, like, big, huge pads on, man. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
The shoulder pads are, like, huge, and the thigh pads and everything.
I wore big shoulder pads, man. You know, one thing about me, I wanted to have the biggest shoulder pads I could to protect my shoulders and all. You know, and I think guys today, they wear the smaller shoulder pads and they get a lot of injuries, but I had, like, one shoulder injury early in my career, then I designed a little thing where I would put the pads crossways at the front part of my shoulders and the back part to keep the shoulder pads from, like, sitting down on my shoulders, and I never had shoulder injuries again. So we had to wear the big ones. And then, you know, I wore the smallest thigh pads I could. Knee pads, I made those, but I wanted to make sure I protect the shoulders.
So you being a guy that went from quarterback to playing running back, you see it happen so many times when guys are coming out of high school to college or even college into the pros, where they basically force guys to change positions. Is that something that you're okay with, or are there ever any instances where you're like, man, they shouldn't force that guy to change? He actually can play quarterback.
Well, if the guy, I mean, you look at today, I think they're giving people more opportunities today because I think even a pro game is getting more into the spread offense. So if a guy was very successful at it, like a Russell Wilson, no, he's not over. Russell is probably, 5'11".
Mm-hmm.
He's not 6 feet for sure. Drew Brees is probably 6 feet or 5'11 and three quarters. And I think now in this day and age, they won't force a lot of guys. For me, you know, we ran a more of a running shoot type style offense. We ran the option a lot. My goal was to play in the NFL. I didn't care what position I played. Just getting to the NFL. If I wanted to stay a quarterback, could have gone to Canada, was offered a 3-year guarantee contract. I'm a Saskatchewan Rough Riders, but every time I went to sleep and I dream, I never dream of playing the CFL. I dreamed of playing the NFL, and I got that opportunity, and I took it.
Well, you were a darn good NFL football player, one of the best all-purpose players to come along, really, over the last 25, 30 years. You had an amazing career with the Redskins and the Eagles. But before that, Southwest Louisiana, which I don't know if our listeners know, that is actually now Louisiana Lafayette, right? They've changed their name. That's who they are, the Raging Cajuns, still that same school.
Yeah, that makes you know when you're old, when people in the school change their name.
Right, I know, right? But when you were there, David Culley was your quarterback's coach as you played quarterback. He's since went on to the NFL. He coached wide receivers for a long time, and now he's switching back to the quarterback position here in Buffalo. What can you tell us about your former coach, David Culley?
Well, I think he's a very good coach, fair guy. You know, he's going to demand a lot from his quarterback. David played quarterback himself. He and David Lee were both quarterbacks in college at Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they went on and he did his thing. And I think he was at Southwest. Then he went to UTEP and then Texas A&M and ended up in Tampa to the Steelers, ended up at the Eagles, Kansas City. Now he's there in Buffalo. And one thing I'll say about him, he made me a much better passer from high school to college. And in high school, I threw the ball. In college, I began to pass it because of the different things he did. And he stays on you. He's a fair coach. He's a good motivator. And I thank him for me being in the NFL and being where I was, because that was a game. I got into an argument with a grad assistant, almost got into a fight the night on Friday night before the game. And he basically told the coach, if he plays, I quit. So that situation right there, well, he means business. If you're going to be the quarterback, you say you got to lead by example. You can't be a guy out there doing bad things. And, you know, I got my act right and went on and did some great things. But when you look at him, every position he's ever coached, no matter the level of the talent, he got a lot out of him. So I expect him to do the same thing with the quarterbacks there.
Hey, Brian, what do you think about – we were just debating in the last segment about – coaches in the NFL. Now, we all know that Coach Culley played quarterback. He's coached a lot of receiver, but he played quarterback. But
you have a lot of quarterback in college.
He coached quarterback in college. Yep. But you have a lot of coaches in the NFL that never played a position and they end up coaching that position. What do you feel about that? What do you think about that?
Well, for me, it's a challenge because you know, players, we're going to challenge a coach. Mm-hmm. And I had a running back coach who never played any college football or pro football, but he always told me, if you do this, you'll have a lot of success. And I'm like, well, how do you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, you never did it. You know, I think you don't have to play the position to be a good coach at it, but when you play the position, you get a lot more respect a lot quicker from your players. And when you get that respect a lot quicker, you can get past a lot of the little silly things early. Because I think every coach wants to get respect from his players. Every player wants to give it. But you got to earn it in a sense. And those that didn't play, players are going to challenge them and find out, do they really know what they're talking about, or did they get the job because they're just friends with somebody?
Hey, Brian, Sean McDermott, the new head coach here in Buffalo, he started his coaching career with the Eagles a little bit while you were there. Do you remember him while he was there, an assistant to the head coach, Andy Reid?
Yeah, I remember him because we called him Lil Ray because he had that red hair and he kind of called him Lil Reagan's always with Andy Reid. But Sean learned from one of the best defensive coordinators, I think, in history of the NFL, and Jim Johnson. And you can see the success he had while he was in Philly still. Then he went on with Ron Rivera to the Panthers, and he had some success there too. So Sean was always a hardworking guy, a guy who basically was like a sponge. He absorbed everything he saw. And you can see a lot of Jim in his coaching style. And if he could go up there and be half of Jim Johnson, you all got some good stuff. One thing about both of those guys, you're not going to get any of that Rex Ryan braggadocious type stuff, but they're going to come out there and they're going to want their team to play with passion, play with tenacity, and they expect to get everything that Rex said he would get. But when you boast about it, people want to see it a lot sooner.
You know, I'm looking over your career numbers here. I don't think people realize, Brian, there's only one player in the history of this league with more all-purpose yards than you, and his name happens to be Jerry Rice, and the only reason is he played that extra last year where he got like 400 more yards. Otherwise, you'd be atop everybody who's ever played in the history of this league for all-purpose yards still. And, I mean, you retired, 10, 13 years ago. Is that crazy that you think about that?
Yeah, I think about it because when I started the league, I wanted to play 4 years, make some money, and go start a business, and ended up playing 14, and I never knew about where I was last night. Like when we got to Philly, they would let you know. But, you know, when you go to play football, I think the main thing, you just want to go out and be successful. You want to help your team. You don't think about all the different things you can do, the accolades you may get. But I guess when you play 14 years, they begin to pile up. So, it shocks me still when I see people talking about Jerry Rice, or they show that list. My name is right behind me. It's surreal in a sense.
It's amazing.
Brian, you talk about guys that that played a while and have a lot of accolades. Terrell Owens, a guy who played a good amount of years. He's up there in yards, top three, I think, in receiving yards. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, he can't get in the Hall of Fame. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame, isn't it? It's not. It's about what you do on the football field.
That's right.
I don't think it has anything to do with, a character contest, a popularity contest. I think a lot of the people that are voting, they need to, put their self-serving ways aside and vote based on what he did on the field. Terrell Owens is a Hall of Famer. The thing that really trips me out when people wait 15, 20, 30 years to get in the Hall of Fame, did you all of a sudden become a Hall of Famer 30 years after leaving the game? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You didn't do anything else. You didn't change your resume in a sense, but I think he should be in. The fact that Terrell Owens was, maybe didn't talk to the media when they wanted him to talk to him, people trying to say, well, we went places, he messed it up. Well, I saw him go to Philadelphia and they went straight to the Super Bowl. I think Donovan McNabb really loved the fact that he was there because he never had a good receiver or a very good receiver until T.O. stepped in the building. So I don't see why he's not there. He should be, and I hope they get it corrected next year instead of saying who else deserves to be there before he gets there.
Brian, you yourself were a finalist this year for the Hall of Fame, and you have numbers among the elites of this game. Someday, hopefully, you'll be enshrined in Canton as well. I mean, is it something you think about a lot? Is it something that discourages you when you don't get that call and feel that you should be?
Well, it doesn't discourage me. I watch Art Monk take forever to get into the Hall of Fame, and when Art Monk retired, he was number one all over the receiving stats, and I knew what he was. I played with him. I knew what he was. I'm watching Jersey Colby now, who's been out the game for 20 years, who played on arguably the best offensive line in history. They went to four Super Bowls with three quarterbacks, three different running backs. The offensive line was steady, and you mean to tell me only Russ Grimm is a Hall of Fame on that line? Joe Gibbs is in the Hall of Fame. John Riggins is in the Hall of Fame. You got Russ Grimm and Art Monk. I think Joe Jacoby belongs there, too. So, for me, I went out, I did what I was supposed to do. I begin to look at the NFL Hall of Fame a lot more where you have a lot of quarterbacks, a lot of running backs, a lot of receivers. Well, when are you going to start? Like, you have kickers, three kickers, Martin Anderson this year, Ray Guy, and Jan Stenerud. Are they the only special teams players that ever in the history of the game did something that qualifies Hall of Fame? You mean to tell me after how many years this game has been around, only three kickers deserve Hall of Fame notoriety? I don't get that.
Well, Brian, I mean, look, you're preaching to the choir here. Remember, Steve Tasker played in Buffalo a long time, and he's arguably the greatest non-return man special teams player to ever play this game, and a lot of people believe that he should be in the Hall. I know it's an uphill fight. He probably won't get there, but we believe that here.
Well, we put three people on him, and he still makes a damn tackle. If you look at Steve, you think you're seeing a lawyer or an accountant, but he gets on the football field, nobody can block him.
Right.
And the thing for me is every coach in every locker room, every game is saying three phases of the game. And then when you go for a Hall of Fame voting, they only vote for a certain position, not the whole team. And I understand I'm not Joe Montana. I'm not Jerry Rice. But guess what? They wasn't me either.
That's right.
Can Joe drop back and return kicks for 14 years at the level I did? I doubt it. Devin Hess is another guy coming along. Should he not be when he gets eligible to be? Now, I just don't understand how they can call it the Pro Football Hall of Fame and they don't represent every position and every position equally.
Right. Now, the biggest question is you have two guys, and we talked to somebody about this a couple of days ago. You have two guys coming up next year that have well-documented off-the-field issues in Ray Lewis and Randy Moss. You think those guys will end up getting in?
I think both of those guys are first ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what I say. Brett Favre had the issues with the
painkillers
and all that stuff. And I talked to some Hall of Fame voters and some guys in the Hall of Fame, and they were instructed to forget about the off-field issues. Understand?
Mm-hmm. Right.
If they don't forget about the off-field issues with these other two guys, then it's a damn problem with the Hall of Fame altogether.
Yeah, because it's a hypocritical situation with T.O.
True.
Then. I mean, absolutely, no doubt about it, and I agree with you
100%. He did nothing criminal.
Yep.
He may have rubbed some people the wrong way, but he didn't get in trouble. He did nothing criminal. The guy just thought he was the best out there, and sometimes he'll rub me the wrong way by saying, give me the damn ball. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, no doubt.
I want that guy on my team.
Hey, Brian, before we let you go, this year was the 25th anniversary of your Super Bowl 26 championship team, and I hate bringing it up because I am on Buffalo Bills radio right now, but man, the Bills were so good that year, but really, you guys, that was a buzzsaw. I think that is one of the more underrated Super Bowl teams that we've seen. I mean, you guys really ran through the league pretty, I kind of think, under the radar, and then maybe it's taken a long time, and I don't know if anybody really appreciates how good that team really was, Brian.
I still don't understand what's the bias towards the Redskins team. Because that team that year, offense, defense, and special teams were all in the top five. You know, we were able to do what we wanted to do, when we wanted to do, against any team. And we played against Buffalo, which was a very good football team, but they pissed off our offensive line. And then the rest is history. I just think that when you look at the things, I mean, Mark Rippon was sacked 9 times that year. 9 times in 16 games.
That's amazing.
You know, we had Ernest Byner and Gerald Riggs had great years. The three receivers did their thing. We had probably more sacks and fumble recoveries than in history in 1 year. Our special teams, we scored at will. We pinned people back. But when people talk about the best ever, they always talk about the teams that had all these Hall of Famers.
Yep.
That are already there. Maybe they should start putting some of these guys in the Hall of Fame and give them the truth.
Yeah, that was a great team. It was part of ruining my childhood. Thank you very much, Brian. Okay, I really want to thank you very much for that. Hey, thanks for coming aboard today.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. Thanks for coming aboard. You were a great player and fun to watch.
That was sarcastic. I'm so sorry.
I know, right? I know. Right? you were awesome to watch. Really enjoyed watching you play, and hopefully you'll be in that Hall of Fame someday. And we really appreciate you joining us today.
All right, man. Thank you all. Yeah, have a good day.
All right. At B Mitch Live CSN. He's doing a lot of good things out there. I'm telling you, that was a – people think like, oh, the Bills, they went to those 4 Super Bowls. We talk about the losses. The Bills were really, really good. And the only team in the league that year that just happened to have that incredible year, the Redskins were a machine that year. They were amazing. Ah, it still bothers me.
Hey, you would have thought
any other year, you think the way the Bills played that year, but – one team just rose up out of the ashes to be incredible that year.
It happens like that, you know. You would have thought that was that. I thought that was happening this year,
right?
With the Falcons.
That's right. It kind of reminded me of
that.
It
just went to bed. Like, what happened?
You're right. All right, we'll take a timeout. We're a little late to the break. We'll come back. We got a lot more on the table for you. Stick on hold if you're on hold. In the meantime, what rule or procedure or anything about the game would you change? Whether that's how the league is set up, some of the things they're doing, replay wise, playoff wise, rules wise, penalty wise, challenge anything. It's on the table today on the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Really, really good stuff from Brian Mitchell just now. Thanks a lot for the tweets. A lot of you are reacting to that interview on Twitter, at Sal Sports, at DA Jones 19. You can follow him at B Mitch Live CSN. But thank you very much. Lots of good feedback on that. He really was terrific. Lots of good insight. Donald, let's go to the phone lines right now. Mark in Jersey City. What's up, brother?
Hey, man. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Right.
This is something I've always wanted. I don't understand why the league doesn't have a developmental league, and I understand it's always about profit with the NFL, and other leagues have developmental leagues that aren't set up for profit. Hockey, soccer in Europe and everywhere else, Major League Baseball. And you guys were touching on coaching. I mean, that would be the place, because there's so many guys who come into the league that just aren't ready.
No, thanks. What do you think about developmental league? Thanks, Mark.
You know, for me, a developmental league, it works, and then it doesn't work, all right? And I'll start off with it wouldn't work just because as a player, you have a certain amount of time to make money until they start to say you're getting old and we can't pay you, you know? So as a player, it's like, I need to be on that level or I won't have a chance to get paid, because once I get above 26, 27, they're going to start to say I'm old, especially at like the running back positions and things like that, you know? So I need to be on that level. So, because sometimes guys get paid just for making a key play in a key game,
right?
You know? And so you'll have players that say, I need to be up there and just get my shot up there. But from the aspect or the standpoint of, you do need a developmental league, because, like you said, there are so many players that come into this league that are not ready. And that's the place where you teach these guys how to run routes, how to do certain things out the backfield, quarterbacks, how to read a defense. Like, you do need that, and it might help the product that you have on the NFL field, you know. And now you have a bunch of guys that really know what they're doing because they've played in this developmental league. So, like, you can look at it from both ways.
By the way, you could also have coaches in that developmental league. I think that would help them as well.
We talked yesterday about a coach combine.
Yeah, that'd be an awesome idea.
Coaches in that league, it would help out, because now you're a head coach in the developmental league, and now you know when to throw a challenge flag because you've done it down there. You know, you might not make as much money, but guess what? You want to be a head coach in this league? Go down there and learn how to be a coach. and then come up here and decide, really, if you want to call plays or not and be the head coach.
No doubt about it. I think that's a great point. Donald, that was off the air. I wanted to expand on that when you come back, if you will. A coach combine. I love this idea you had. And I don't know if you brought it up on the air before, but you can bring it up on the air when we come back. Maybe his suggestion for something you can do. Got a lot of great suggestions on the air and on Twitter, I should say, and through your phone calls still. What can the NFL do to be an even better league? What changes can be made? I got some interesting ones I'm going to throw at you and Donald when we come back as well. And we'll get into that and see if he agrees or disagrees to go in a different direction on some of these issues. We'll come back on the John Murphy Show.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports Update.
The Sabres lose last night at home to the Anaheim Ducks 5-2, the final score. They are at Toronto tomorrow night. That will be a 7 p.m. puck drop. Pregame, of course, on the radio, WGR Sports Radio 550 at 6 p.m. tomorrow night. Sabres and the Leafs. The Bills have completed their coach hiring, as far as Sean McDermott's staff is concerned. They are now all in the books, on the books, and ready to rock and roll for 2017. See the complete list of 26 coaches Sean McDermott hired at BuffaloBills.com. Tiger Woods has pulled out of the next two tournaments. They include the Genesis Open and the Honda Classic due to back spasms. And Niagara in hoops looks for a sweep over Canisius in men's basketball tonight. That one at the Kessler Center at Canisius is a 9 p.m. tip, because it's going to be on national television. 9 o'clock tip tonight, Niagara and Canisius. Duke wound up beating North Carolina last night in one of college basketball's biggest rivalry games. But tonight, a big rivalry here in our own backyard. Niagara and Canisius get the national stage, Donald.
They get the national stage. That's huge.
Yeah, they're going to be on national TV tonight.
I wanted to ask you, what do you think about, like, Tom Brady right now is still playing out of his mind?
Yes.
When you start to – now, this is going to be biased because we're here in Buffalo. And so I know
try not to be with Brady answers. Because –
when you start to see a decline,
he's great.
When you start to see a decline in the great, great players, would you rather them just retire, or would you rather them like a Darrelle Revis talking about going to safety now, like, just retire? You've been a great corner for a long time. It's time to hang it up. You know, guys like Peyton Manning, he went out and won a Super Bowl, but he wasn't the same Peyton Manning.
He's an exception.
A guy like Tiger Woods right now, who has to keep pulling out of tournaments because of his back. He's been doing this for years. And every time he plays in a tournament, he doesn't even make the cut, you know? So you're talking about one of the all-time greats in that sport, if not the best to ever play that sport, that he can't even make it through two tournaments, back-to-back tournaments.
There's a difference between Tiger and the rest of the guys that you're talking about to me. The difference is Tiger, it's not age with him. You know, there is maybe a comeback in him if he ever could stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Guys in... Peyton Manning was never going to be better. He was never going to get better. He was only going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
Once it starts to happen with pro athletes, you might have a year where you get better, but you're generally going to be in decline. And by the way, we have a template for this. A lot of us who grew up with Joe Montana.
Right.
Joe Montana went to the Kansas City Chiefs. He played the Bills in the AFC title game. The Bills beat him, but his skills were clearly starting to diminish. Mm-hmm. And there gets to be a point of diminishing returns. And I think that was happening with with Manning, but they did a great job of putting a defense around him.
Right.
But that was happening. Now, you'll talk to older people. It's a great question. People older than me, Donald, will tell you one of the worst things they ever saw was Willie Mays stumbling around in the outfield when he should have never been playing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And he had switched teams, and that was hard for people who grew up loving baseball and loving Willie Mays to see. I don't want to see the athletes I love doing that. I saw Derek Jeter start to have a decline, but he already knew he was out. It was good for me. I didn't want him to come back because I didn't want to see Derek Jeter be remembered for the declining skills. He clearly was already declining, but at least he was good enough to still play. Any more time he spent on the field, he probably would not have been.
I hate to see it. I hate to see it. Even I look at a guy like Roy Jones. To me, Roy Jones is one of the best fighters ever.
Ever.
And later in his career, when he was trying to hang on, he was getting knocked out. And it was like, dude, just hang it up, man. You're fighting.
Right.
This is a young man's sport, man. You keep trying to fight these young dudes, they're going to keep knocking you out.
George Foreman, same way. When he fought later in his career, Larry Holmes. Boxers are notorious for that, right? I mean, because they're getting huge paydays for themselves. But in Tiger's case, I don't need to see him retire. If I saw Tom Brady start to decline, and I took the emotion out of it of being in Buffalo and all that and just watched him for his greatness – if I started to see him decline, I'd say he needs to get out because you don't want to remember him that way.
Right.
There's a generation of people who will only remember them for those years they're in decline if they play a good 3-4 years that way.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger's different to me because, again, it's golf. It's not football. It's not hockey or baseball or basketball. If he somehow does fix his back problem, he could be a really good golfer for another 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but there is something to be said for, hey, man, you're already kind of – like, you've proven you can't get healthy.
Exactly.
Maybe it's time to move on.
Maybe it's time
There's a mystique about Tiger, though, isn't there? That we want to see him come back
Yeah, you want to see him at least win, like, one more, just a tournament.
Right,
itself,
I agree.
But then one more major, like, just win one more major for us, and I'd be happy. But, man, he cannot stay healthy in back-to-back tournaments.
Who else? Did Favre had a decline?
Favre,
I mean, you could
decline.
See that.
Yeah.
You know, it was time for him to go, and he did. Mm-hmm. It was okay. I mean, he played – some of these guys play a little bit too long.
A decline?
Who did?
Jordan.
You know, he did, but he still had a couple big games, right, later on. But when he came back with the Wizards, it was kind of weird.
Yeah, that was weird.
But he still played okay. He knew his role. But I wish he would have just stepped away. I didn't need to see him in a Wizard uniform. Did you?
No.
I didn't need to see Jordan in a Wizard uniform. Come on. What was that, right? Montana could still play when he went to Kansas City. They had Steve Young, so it was easier to move on. But it was clear that he was not the same player.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you knew even when the Bills played him in, like, that playoff game, you're like, he's not Joe Montana he was with the Niners.
Right.
He's not throwing to Rice and Taylor and winning all these games.
The interesting thing for me, especially with a guy like Brady, is going to be, do they trade him if he starts to decline? And we all know Bill Belichick will get rid of you, but you're talking about the best – arguably the best player to ever play football. It's an argument right now.
I heard
a
debate about this on our own station the other day, and some believe that there's just no way he would do that. I will tell you, I believe he will do that, only to a point, though, where it's got to be a few years from now. It wouldn't be today or tomorrow.
Right.
Even if he felt today that he's starting to decline, I do think that Bill Belichick could wake up one morning and say, look, I mean, Tom's 44. He's clearly not the same quarterback he's been. I got to move on. He would do it.
Yeah.
He would do it. And you know what? Brady might welcome it another shot somewhere else.
At that point, Brady should retire, man.
I wish he would retire. What would you rather have? Let me ask you this. As a Buffalo guy, a Bills
fan.
All right. Put the emotion back into this. This is a question for the fans, too. Would you rather see Brady just say, I'm retiring? Or would you rather have a few cracks at him when you know he's definitely not the same Brady?
I think you'd rather have a few cracks at him.
Because you want to beat him, right?
You want to beat him, right? You want to have a few cracks at him when he's not the same guy, but playing for the Patriots.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
Okay, if he's clearly in decline, you know, like, he's definitely in decline. Like, he's slipping. He's had 2 years now where he's definitely not the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you kind of want him to start for the Patriots because you want to beat him?
You do. You want to just hit him all the time.
Everybody
you
says, when's he going
to
retire?
Interceptions and all types of things. At some point, he's going to decline. And it's going to be in the next couple of years.
Do you know what usually happens, though, Donald? Usually with quarterbacks, they hit a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't gradually decline. They kind of fall off a cliff like Manning did. Manning just, the second half of 2 years ago,
oh.
He was awful. I mean, all of a sudden, like, eight games in, you're like, who is this guy that is pretending to be Peyton Manning?
Just throwing, like, the ball, the passes he was throwing, man. It was like, who like, really, who is this dude? And if that happens to Brady, yeah, being a Buffalo person, you do want to see that. I want to see him still with the Patriots, though. Like, I don't want to see him traded to another team, and he's terrible where he's not even in this division anymore, and so you don't get a chance to beat him. Now, Patriots fans will say, well, you had to wait until he declined to beat him.
Yep.
And okay,
okay,
it is what
whatever.
It is.
But he's still. But what have you done for me lately, league? Right?
Exactly. What have you done for me lately? And you decided to keep going when you know yourself as a player. You know, all right, it's time for me to hang it up. And it's tough. It's tough for players because you just love. You love being around. You love being in the locker room with the guys. You love traveling and playing the games and all of that stuff. But you know, it is time for me to hang up. It's just so hard for them to give it up, man. I hope. It's like you're talking out of both sides of your mouth because you hope that you don't see him just fall off a cliff. But at the same time, being a Buffalo person,
that'd be fine.
You hope that he does and you get to play against him.
No doubt about it. Cal in Grand Island, you're on the John Murphy Show. What's up, Cal?
Hey, guys. Great show. Great topic today, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Let's go back to your first thing about the rules change. I believe there should be kind of like an NFL like umpire in the upstairs, like watching a TV. Because you know how many times you watch TV and you can blatantly see the ball hit the ground and then, like, Rex would miss it, you know, wouldn't throw the red flag out. Just to eliminate all the nonsense, man, don't you think you should have, NFL should just have, like, a ref, you know, just sitting in the, you know, watching TV and then just intervene whenever.
That's the college system, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you, there you go. I totally like that.
Okay.
One thing I did want to touch on was, you know, everybody talks about Belichick and Brady being attached to the hip and, you know, Belichick wasn't anything of a coach until he got Brady. Well, with that being said, now how great are you, you know, you think about just your guest you just had on earlier about Joe Gibbs doing it, winning three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks. Now, how do you rank him as far as, you know, all-time great?
One of the greatest all-time to me. One of the greatest all-time. He really is. It wasn't just the Super Bowls with Joe Gibbs. They were always good, always competitive. But when he came back again that second time around, Cal, the game kind of passed him by, but you know, like we talk about quarterbacks and declining, he wasn't the same guy, and he had a different kind of owner and what he wanted and things like that. But he is one of the best ever to me.
No, I agree, too. And real quick, and one thing I think when he was in his prime, the best thing that he did was when he saw something work for another team, he was like the master, like steal it. Like, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that year that they went against the Bills in the Super Bowl, he copied that defense that Denver and Dan Reeves came up with in the championship game. That we barely won that game. Remember what? We only had Carlton Bailey had the touchdown. We won 10-7. He stole that exact defense and then implemented it into a Super Bowl to beat us in the Super Bowl. I mean, that's what I thought his master genius was. It was like he was like, we could see stuff that worked for other teams against other teams and then hurry up and implement it to his guys.
Yeah, no doubt. Donald, do you remember Joe Gibbs coaching at all? I mean, even his second time around? I mean, it wasn't too long ago. It was right before you came in the league.
Yeah,
but.
So when we talk about, they're a generation of people that will only remember a coach for. Now, I know Joe Gibbs won three Super Bowls, and I know he's one of the best coaches to do it, and he did it with three different quarterbacks. I know that just because I played the sport and I've studied the sport.
Yep.
But people my age will only remember him from when he came back. You know, so that's what we're talking about, where there's always going to be a generation of people that if you decide you want to play or coach for too long and the game passes you by or your tools start to diminish – they're only going to remember you for the last parts of your career when you weren't the same person, you know. So,
yeah, and that would be a guy like that for you if around your age, someone like that for Joe Gibbs. Joe Gibbs, I'm just looking over his career numbers. In his first stint in Washington before he came back in 2004, Donald, in playoff games alone, he was 16-5.
Wow.
I mean, they would get there and they would win. He was the Belichick of the 90s, I guess, right? The 80s and the 90s. Even with two below 500 seasons the second time he came back, he still has a 6.21 winning percentage as an all-time head coach in almost 20 years. Pretty amazing when you think about it. He is one of the better coaches ever. You know what else he's actually known for?
His racing team?
That is right. I was going to say halftime adjustments.
Oh, okay.
He was great at halftime adjustments, but he is known for his racing team. You got me on that one, Donald, no doubt about it, the NASCAR team. Let's go to Kim in Angola. What's up, Kim?
Hey. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Kim.
Good afternoon, man.
Rule changes that I would like to see.
Yep.
First one is with punting. Okay, how come a field goal kicker gets the 7-8 yards back added to his kick and a punter is not given the 13, 14 yards back. And the second rule is if you're at your 5-yard line and you got 95 yards to go and you get a holding penalty or a personal foul, how come you only get half the distance, so be to say first and 12, instead of moving the yard markers up 10, 15 yards?
I love this suggestion. I love it. Thank you very much. This happened. It's kind of what got brought up a couple of years ago. The first one, by the way, that's an interesting one. Stats on the punter. How come the kicker gets the yardage of it's a 47-yard field goal because he kicked it from the 37, not where the line of scrimmage is?
Mm-hmm.
But a punter, it's counted from where the line of scrimmage is for his overall stats, not from where he punted it.
Not from where he punted it. You're right. Some
doesn't make sense,
like,
right?
Wait, that doesn't make sense. And it's something
I never really thought of that, but that makes a lot of sense.
It, right? But you're right.
If you were a punter, you would hate that.
I would hate
that. If I brought Colton Schmidt in here right now, he'd say, damn straight, I want to get that on my...
What's that, an extra 15 yards?
That's about 12 for 12 a lot of guys, 15,
yeah.
Crazy, right? Here's what he's saying. I love this suggestion. I'll run the spire. You tell me. So let's say you're at your own 5-yard line. It's first and 10 to start a drive, mm-hmm. right? Own 5-yard line, first and 10. You get called for holding at the line of scrimmage. So it's a 10-yard penalty. They can't do 10 yards. They got to go half the distance
half the
to
distance,
the goal.
Right.
So now it's really only a 2.5-yard penalty, Donald.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be first and 12 and a half. Okay. Because it seems like that's actually an advantage for the offense. I mean, you might as well hold. If you get caught, so what? Because if you don't get caught, it might help you. So in order to even it out, what he's saying, the caller, is instead of going half the distance, keep the ball at the 5-yard line, but now make it first and 20. You have to get 20 yards further for the first down.
Right.
Because it's still then a 10-yard penalty.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense, too. I agree with that,
that's
too.
That's a great suggestion.
That is a great suggestion.
Because why wouldn't you hold then? If you have a first and 5, or first and 10 from your 5, there's really, hey, man, if I hold this guy, I don't get caught. It's great.
If I do hold him,
all I'm getting is a 2.5-yard freaking penalty.
Right. I hold him every time.
Every time.
Every time. I mean, if I need to hold him, I'm going to hold him.
I think that's a great suggestion. Thank you very much. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. Here are some that have come your way. I got my own, but I love some of these that you guys are saying. The Real Joe Pro says, no celebration penalties, Donald. No more. Or eliminate them.
I'm a big advocate for they need to eliminate the celebration penalties. This is entertainment. At the end of the day, sports is entertainment. All right? So we're here to entertain the fans. We get paid to entertain the fans. That's what we get paid to mm-hmm. do. And when you score touchdowns, like we're watching Antonio Brown on the screen for MSG, when you score touchdowns, it's so hard to score touchdowns in this league. You should be able to celebrate that.
No doubt.
And your entire life, you wait to get to the NFL because you can't celebrate when you're in Pop Warner. You can't celebrate in high school. Guys are really pushing the envelope right now in college because these guys in college are starting to do some celebrations. And the refs are like, you can see the refs like, hey, stop, stop. But when you get to the league, now it's your time. First of all, it's so hard to get to the league. And then when you get to the league, it's so hard to score touchdowns. And so why can't I celebrate?
I agree. I mean, I don't want to sit there for 10 minutes watching a guy celebrate.
Yeah, I don't,
maybe
I mean,
put a clock on it or something, but holy cow.
But
let him celebrate. Let him have fun.
It's entertainment.
So what if his teammate joins him?
You know what people say to me all the time, and we talked about this a lot. People loved Stevie's celebrations.
They did.
And Stevie would get penalties and things like that, but people loved it. He entertained the fans. Now, you don't want somebody to get penalties for your team,
right?
Because that's hurting your team. But if you can do something and it's not, like, going to get you a penalty, why are you penalizing that guy for doing that?
I agree. You know, some of the better celebrations when I was a kid, speaking of the Redskins, they had a group called the Fun Bunch. You ever hear the Fun Bunch?
I heard
of it. I'm going to have to Google and YouTube the Fun mm-hmm. Bunch for you. So they had the Fun Bunch with these smaller wide receivers, all right? They all mm-hmm. had them, and I think, like, Ricky Sanders was one of them, and I can't remember all their names right now. But anyway, when one would score, they'd all get in the end zone together, and they'd hold hands, and they'd go 1, 2 in a circle, 3, and they'd all jump up together and do it. Today, that would be a penalty. You can't celebrate, like, with your teammates. That was pretty cool how they did that. There was some great celebrations. Butch Johnson had the earthquake shake. We remember Icky Woods and the Icky Shuffle. And then Billy White Shoes Johnson was a great celebrator of touchdowns. I'd love to go back to that. Those are showmen. I only know those guys now because when I was a kid, I only knew them through celebrations. I was a little kid. I didn't watch Dallas mm-hmm. Cowboys games. But I knew who Butch Johnson was
right.
because he did a celebration called the Earthquake Shake. And he dropped down to his knees and he pretended he was bringing out the holsters and shooting guns. It was cool.
My son, at 6 years old, my son loves football, right? So when there's a football game on, all he's doing is throwing the football up and down to himself. He'll catch it, act like he scores a touchdown, and it's like, hold on, I got to do my celebration dance. Like, this is what kids dream about doing. And now you can't do it. It's the no fun league, man. It's
Max does the same thing when he scores in hockey. And
I've seen
hockey.
Videos of
he
Max.
Says, he says he makes me play the goal song, and then he does a goal celebration. But then afterwards, he says, now fight. And he jumps on me, and he has to fight me. And I'm like, dude, now you got a penalty because you fought me. Like, you could do a goal celebration, but now you got a penalty for fighting.
I've seen Max, like, lose his mind, though. Like,
he has.
In those videos.
He gets crazy about that stuff, no doubt about it. 803-0550, at Sal Sports, at D.A. Jones on Twitter. How about a major pass interference and a minor pass interference, says Chet, kind of like running into the kicker. So some pass interferences might be 15 or 10 or 5.
Right.
Some pass interferences might be spot fouls if they're blatant.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be bad.
That wouldn't be bad. You could make that a spot foul. If it's blatant, you just grab a guy because you got beat. We got to make that a spot foul because you just totally just grab them. It's kind of like in basketball when you have a guy that gets a steal and he's going and there's nobody in front of him and you grab him or something like that. Like, isn't that a tech?
Yes.
Right? So
it's an intentional foul.
It's an intentional foul, yes. Right? So they get a shot for that.
They get
right?
a shot. And the ball.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you can make it like one that's more blatant versus one that's not as blatant, one that's ticky-tacky should just be, you know, a 15-yard penalty and an automatic first down. I like that.
Here's one that comes up all the time. We saw this happen in the Super Bowl, of course, and some people complained. Overtime, Donald. It's a whole huge discussion we could have. But Lofus says, make OT in the playoffs requiring the ball plus lead to win. I don't make OT in the playoffs requiring ball plus lead to win. I'm not really sure what the suggestion is there, but I think overall the point is, should we change overtime?
I to be honest with you, I like the overtime rules how they are. I like the fact it just puts pressure on. I'm all about everybody having pressure on them, you know. That's what it's about, man. The pressure busts pipes or it makes you great, so you have to perform under pressure. And so whoever gets the ball first, you got to score. The defense has to stop you. I like that rule. I don't have a problem.
Patriots had to go 75 yards.
Right.
Falcons didn't stop them.
I don't like the college rule. I'd rather the college rule. If you're going to give both teams the ball, at least put them back to the other 20-yard line. Don't just give them the ball where they can – if they don't get it, at least you can kick a field goal.
Right.
You know, that's – I don't care if it's just college. Like, no. Put some more pressure on those guys. They're about to go into the league anyway.
803-0550. Switching up the subject a little bit here is Fred in Cheektowaga. I said anything's on the table today, so go ahead, Fred.
How you doing, guys?
Good, thank you.
Good. First, I just wanted to make I have two comments to make. First, to Donald, I just want to smooch you up a little bit. I don't go to a lot of Bills games anymore, but the last time I went to a game, you and Stevie Johnson were announced together, and then it was a home game. We went on to win the game against the Patriots. I don't remember what year it was. We don't beat the Patriots a lot, so I remember that game, and I just want to let you know I just have nothing but mad respect for you.
Oh, thank you, man. I think it was 2011.
It was, yep, yeah. 2011.
So, it was a great game. Again, it was the last game I ever went to. I think my point, comment I want to make, and hopefully you guys are good with this comment, I've been listening the last few days, and I have to be honest, I cringe every time I hear a Buffalo Bills fan call in wanting Jimmy Garoppolo to come here. In business, I've been in business many years. We make decisions based on trends. I mean, who knows? Jimmy Garoppolo may go on to be the next Tom Brady. Who knows? But a trend is a trend. I mean, Hoyer came out. Before Hoyer, Castle came out. Everybody wanted him because he was doing so good for the Patriots.
Ryan Mallett?
Yeah, Mallett, whatever you call him. I don't know. I don't think it's a good call. I don't think Doug Whaley's listening to, you know, myself or anyone else and making decisions on what we make. I'm not jazzed up about Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm gonna be a little animated here. I think Dan Carpenter can go on the Patriots and play quarterback. That system I think is so tight, and I don't know how to feel about him coming to the Bills. I just think there's too many options out there, and I just want to know what you guys had to say about that.
All right, well, I want to talk about not just the Bills specifically, but your overall point of Jimmy G, and I appreciate the phone call. This is a good discussion because it appears as though they're going to at least entertain offers to trade him. I don't know if they are going to, Donald, but if you're a team that needs a quarterback, Are you
it's
okay with bringing Jimmy Garoppolo in if it costs you, let's say, a first-round pick?
Not a first-round pick. I mean, here's the thing. It's enticing for a team that – and we all know that every team is out there looking for a quarterback, unless you have the handful of quarterbacks that are out there, like mm-hmm. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. Everybody else is looking for that guy who can be that Tom Brady, right? So the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo, he looked how he looked in the first couple of games, you know, it's going to entice a team out there. For me – I think it's because, like, he looked the way he looked because of that system. And that system is very quarterback friendly. If you can pick up that system, you don't necessarily have to make all of the crazy throws that you have to make in another pro-style type of system, right? So for me, if he was to go to, let's just say, Cleveland, where they're not running the same type of system, does he look like the same quarterback to me? You know, and that's my biggest question. And that's something you won't know until he goes to another team. But that's why I wouldn't give up a first-round pick, because you don't know if he's going to be the same guy in this system. He's not – if he was going to be a franchise quarterback, then he would have been a first-round guy, like coming out of college, right? Like, I just feel like he performs good in that system. And that's why he was – was he undrafted?
Second rounder.
Oh, he's a second rounder?
Second rounder.
Well, I just feel like that's why, you know, they took him, because they felt like he can perform in that system for them.
Well, the Patriots have moved on from backup quarterbacks before, and none of them have gone on to really do anything anywhere else.
Exactly.
We've seen that, which is part of the point the caller makes. And I would say this, if Bill Belichick is willing to move on from him, it should show you that maybe they know.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they think he's going to be a franchise quarterback, I know that they have Tom Brady still, but at some point they have to think, well, how much longer do we have him? And if we can keep Jimmy here on another contract for like 4 years,
that's what I think.
I mean, he's got to be our guy. But I also could say that maybe Bill Belichick feels, look, I'll get a great asset for him. I could still develop another guy, just like I have everybody else that's been behind Tom Brady,
yeah,
because he doesn't have to play yet.
If it's a quarterback-friendly system.
That's
I can bring somebody else in
and I can get a first-round pick for him.
Exactly.
I agree with the caller, though. I would not spend that much for Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't know. If I'm going to spend a first rounder on a quarterback, I think I'd rather go with a young guy who's going to be on his first year of his deal at a rookie contract price, mm-hmm. instead of bringing Jimmy Garoppolo in with 1 year left on his deal where I have to re-sign him at huge money after maybe 1 year and I don't know what I'm getting.
And you just gave up a first round
pick. And I just gave up a first round pick. So I think that's – I wouldn't do it either. I agree with the caller. Let's go to Evan in Virginia Beach. What's going on, Evan?
Hey, I was just thinking about this rule suggestion about the pass interference you guys are talking about.
Yeah, what do you think?
I like it in concept, but my biggest gripe with it is that refs get the calls wrong so often as it is, and then they're going to call a pass interference, and all you're going to hear about is, well, that really should have been a 5 yard, but they called it a spot. That team got a first down. So I feel like it would just lead to more and more controversy on pass interferences, which are already controversial enough as it is.
Great point. I mean, I think the object here would be to leave it as less subjective as possible for referees, right?
Yeah, that'd be ideal, but obviously every game is always something.
No doubt about it. I understand that. I think the goal is, Donald, to have penalties where referees don't have to make, well, is that a worse penalty than that
right?
And everything's a little bit more black and white. No pun on the thing the referee wears, right? The black and white.
The fact of the matter is that DBs need to get better at what they do. All right. So they need better coaching.
Marlon Kerner again.
I'm calling out Marlon Kerner again because he just tweeted me. And so they need to get better. Marlon, maybe you need to go coach.
We will come back. We'll have a lot more on this discussion. What rules, what procedures would you like changed? How about these? I'm going to come back. We're going to talk about them. I got one that Donald might love for wide receivers, actually. And how about the playoff format? Are we good with that? Should we change it up a little bit? I got a couple suggestions on that as well when we come back here on the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, welcome back to the John Murphy Show. Donald Jones, former Buffalo Bills wide receiver, and current, you know, I've been with you for 2 weeks, and I have not, like, given you a chance to kind of tell people also what you do, man. You go around, you speak, and you do a lot of really...
I do some things, you know. I travel. I do some speaking engagements.
But tell everybody why you speak and what it's for and maybe how they can have you do that.
Oh, okay. So why do I speak? Obviously, I speak because I played in the league, and that's really it. No, I speak because
it's not it.
You know, I was sick the entire time I played, and I had the kidney transplant. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why I retired. I had the kidney transplant, and I wrote a book, which is entitled The Next Quarter, Scoring Against Kidney Disease. Go on Amazon and pick it up. I'm telling you, it's the best thing you'll ever read. And so I wrote the book. It became a number one seller the first day.
It's amazing.
And from there, I started to travel and do speaking engagements, and I have fun.
Sales are good. Sales are good.
The sales are great.
Yeah.
The thing is, you make money doing the speaking engagements.
Right.
You know, the book sales, you make money doing it. And I make money in book sales because I self-publish my book, so I get everything.
Oh, that's cool. And you also, you sign for people when you go on these things. They buy your book. You sign your book
and
stuff like that. It's really cool. Mm-hmm. How cool has it been, some of the people you've met going on these speaking engagements?
Man, I've traveled the world, like over to England and different
countries.
A lot of different countries to do speaking engagements. And so it's fun. I meet different doctors from around the world mm-hmm. that have different beliefs in how things should be done. I meet different patients that have different beliefs and different diets and all of that stuff. So I get to learn a lot about different kidney diseases and what patients are dealing with in other countries as far as diet and what we deal with over here in our food, which is a whole nother discussion.
Right.
But the biggest thing is I meet a lot of children that deal with kidney disease and cancer and lung disease and liver disease.
Man.
And I'm talking children that are, you know, 1, 2, diabetes, 1 year old, you know, 1 year. Like, think about a child that's 1 dealing with diabetes or dealing with kidney disease. It's crazy,
you know?
But when you see these kids, they're happy. They don't know really anything that's going on to them.
They don't know any different.
Right. They don't know
any different. That's their life so far.
Right. You know, but they're just happy. They're just going about life. And as adults, we worry so much that we end up, like, killing ourselves, you know?
Right.
So it's just crazy. I meet so many people that are going through different things. And so it's great. And it's not – I don't just speak on kidney disease, though, because I come from an inner-city environment, and I put myself through a lot of different things growing up in that environment. And so I speak to a lot of different people that come from that type of environment just on getting out of that lifestyle, and not just through sports, but – through anything, you know, so it's a lot of motivational speaking.
Marquise Goodwin has sickle cell,
mm-hmm.
and you know, he's got to deal with a lot of things. Have you ever chatted with him just kind of about his situation or anything like that?
No, I don't, you know, I never really overstep into, because I know Marquise from being back here working.
Gotcha.
The guys that are still on the team from when I played, I talk to them a lot about different things, but the new guys that are on the team,
of course, you would be if he ever reached out and, you know,
talk to him. If anybody reaches out, I've had players. There are a lot of players around the NFL, NBA, baseball, hockey that deal with a lot of different things that people don't know about. And they keep it under wraps because they want to sign new contracts and things like that.
Yes, of course.
So I've had a lot of players reach out to me to talk about what it is that I dealt with and how I played sick. How did you play in the NFL with your kidneys functioning at 20%?
How did you, Donald?
I was crazy.
Wow.
That was the one.
So to catch people up, you had a physical with the Indianapolis Colts,
mm-hmm.
which I believe, if I read this right, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, from what I read, and I know about the story, you had a physical with them as you were trying out and you were going to sign with them, and that's when a lot of things kind of came up that really showed that, oh my gosh, I have to go get this taken care of. Is that right?
So where it really showed up was here in Buffalo.
Okay.
I thought I needed glasses, and when I went to see the doctor, when the doctor looks into your eyes, he can see your blood pressure. And so my blood pressure was very high, and so I had to go back to a kidney specialist. And that's when they started to do all these tests, and they told me, it's serious. Like, you might have one more year to play.
Wow.
And so that's why the Bills didn't bring me back, because of that. Because I was in a contract situation at that point. They wanted to do something. And then I left from here, went to New England. When I was in New England, I had a surgery done before I got to New England. Now, when I left here, they put me on these steroids to try to correct anything that they could correct with my kidney. So when you're on steroids, you can't really heal, right? And so I hurt my knee when I was here. So they put me on these steroids, and when I left here, before I got to New England, I had a surgery done wide awake. Right, no, because they couldn't put me to sleep because I was in kidney failure. So wide awake, they gave me some numbing meds, but once you cut down into your knee, you can feel everything, right?
Okay.
So I'm wide awake, having surgery, and it never had a chance to heal because I was still on the steroids when I got to New England. So I wasn't the same player. at the same time, I knew it was coming to an end, and so I didn't really pay attention to anything I was supposed to. So the Patriots playbook is crazy. I never really studied it. I started writing my book when I was in New England.
Okay.
And so, like, when everybody else was studying, I was writing. So they decided they didn't want to bring me back. At that point, I had, like, 10 teams call me. I went on a couple different visits. I go out to Indianapolis, and I'm doing a stress test. And while I'm on the treadmill running, the lady standing next to me, and my blood pressure just kept going up, 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 up. It was like, you're about to have a stroke. And she's like, do you feel fine? And I'm like, I feel fine, because I did feel fine. And she was like, she went and got some doctors. They came back in, and they were like, we need you to get down and sit down and so that my blood pressure could come back down. At that point, Ryan Grigson, who was the GM, he just got fired. People don't know, he has some issues that he deals with as well. So him and I could connect on the same level, and he was like, listen, it's probably best for you to just shut it down. And in my mind, I had it anyway, like, I'm going to shut it down. And so from there, that was like July. From there, I retired, had the transplant in December.
Wow. That's amazing. And when that blood pressure started happening and they told you that, did you know kind of how close you were to really having some problems? Or did it take you to go to the doctor and they say, dude, like, if you would have kept going to that thing?
Yeah. I mean, it really took for me to go to the doctor to see it. You know, and for the doctors to tell me, listen, this is serious. You might have one more year to play, but you should probably shut it down because you're putting yourself in danger. And the only thing I thought about, and this is still to this day, there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about, I might not be here. And this is anybody could you know, anything could happen to you. But for me, you know, kidney disease, when you have a transplant, it usually only lasts average 8 to 10 years, a new kidney. And so there's not a day that doesn't go that goes by that I don't think about. I might not be here for my son to see my son become an adult. And that's all I want to do. I just want to see my son become an adult. After that, and he's raised into manhood, after that point, you know, I'm always going to take care of myself. But whatever happens to me, happens to me. I just want to see that. And so when I was going through everything and I was playing it, that's what I thought about. I just want to see my son become an adult. And that's why it became a lot easier for me to shut it down.
And you'll have another one to
talk
about too.
One to talk about.
You and your wife are expecting
mm-hmm.
and she's due when?
She is due in July.
Okay. Awesome. I hope people know that. You tell everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. I'm like, I just thought to myself, did he not tell people that on the air?
It's
okay. It's cool, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's good. I mean, I'm glad that you did that. And it's a good wake-up call. Maybe there are people listening out there. And the reason I'm glad that you brought that up here in this segment, and I wanted to talk to you about it, I bet you, Donald, there are people driving around right now who have, whether it's kidney disease or some other disease, or they say, man, like, I also have problems managing, and maybe they can reach out to you and talk to you about it. And I know that you're the kind of guy that's going to do that. And you can do that with Donald, by the way, on Twitter at DAJones19. Mm-hmm. Is there a place for the book or a foundation or
the
a website
is,
or anything
the book
like that?
Is on Amazon.
Right.
And then, you know, you can just, if you like would like me to come and speak or anything like that, you can just hit me up on Twitter at DAJones19. Always forget my own Twitter handle.
I know you do. I know you do.
Because, you know, I mean, the 19 part of it is really what gets me because my email is similar, but it's different.
Okay.
And so I always mix those
because you wore 19.
I wore 19. But then my email are two numbers that I wore when I was in high school. And so I mix both of them up sometimes, and it's just.
By the way, side note, I want to tell you this. I'm glad you said it. So one of the rare times I've been wrong in my reporting, Donald, I reported back before the Bills let you go, I was told you were in the process of negotiating another contract with the team. Like, that was possibly going to happen.
Right.
So I threw it out there, and I reported, hey, the Bills and Donald Jones, they want him back. They're talking about it. Mm-hmm. And then basically the next day, the team said, we're not bringing back Donald Jones. So everybody came at me and said, ha-ha, you don't know crap. Oh, ha-ha-ha, you're a jerk.
Yeah.
You're some clown reporter. But I was not wrong, correct?
You wasn't wrong.
Okay.
This is what happened. And this is
so I'm glad you. I've never said. I'm glad that you brought this up because it's one of the times in my life where I put a report out there, and the next day it turned out completely wrong.
No, you were right,
and everybody said, "Ha ha, you don't know anything." And I'm like, "No, I'm pretty sure. I trust the people who told me Donald and the Bills were talking about a contract."
So we were talking about a contract, and this is what when we try to tell people that agents play a big part.
Yes,
and agents put things out there. So we were definitely negotiating a contract.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills wanted me to be the number two wide receiver, right? They wanted to bring me back. And so we're
negotiating.
You were a restricted
free agent
though, right?
At the time.
And so we were trying to do something without having to go into just like having to play another year. And the reason we were doing that was because I was dealing with the kidney stuff. So we were trying to get me paid before.
Gotcha. The agent didn't want that to come out.
Exactly. And so we're negotiating the contract. And so my agent was like, I'm going to put this out there in the media.
Right.
To try to get them to budge on something.
Right.
You know? And so when he put it out there in the media, everybody reported it. And that's what reporters
what do.
Right. And so he put it out there. And the next day, they were like,
yeah,
we don't want
to do that. There you go. Thank you for clearing that up.
He put it out there and it backfired.
Was that 2012?
2012, yes.
Okay.
After the 2012 season.
You cleared my name a little bit, Donald. A little bit. I appreciate that.
So I guess it was 2013, free agency, 2013. But it was, you know, it backfired on me.
Let's go to Chuck in Warren, PA. Thanks a lot for that, Donald. We appreciate it. Great story there. If you want Donald to come speak or you just want to talk to him even off the record, off the air about stuff like that. Chuck, what's going on, man?
Hey, Sal and Donald. Hey, I'm looking at the possibility of a change in the timing whereby when a first down happens, like in college, they stop the clock. Ooh. And in order to move the chains, you have the ball set.
I don't like this, Chuck, because NFL games are long enough, and college games are longer.
They're trying to do something to shorten the NFL game now.
Yeah. They're pretty good at getting the chains moved as quickly as possible.
They are.
I don't need a stoppage.
Here's a rule that I want to see change, and we had one of the callers talk about this. I would love for a referee to be able to intervene in some things, like able to call down. And so you think about the Bills and the Seahawks game.
Yeah.
When the ref put the ball down and never reset the clock, there needs to be somebody in the booth that can say, reset the clock.
Yeah.
Because that was a total mess up. Like, you already messed up the fact you didn't throw the flag on Sherman.
Right.
Then you take it from there and you don't reset the clock and the Bills end up with a delay of game, which pushed him back 5 yards. And if you remember, he hit the first field goal.
That's right. That's a good point. The caller called up and said an umpire like up in the press box.
Right.
That can kind of oversee everything. That would be a great suggestion because there have been plenty of times where I think it's very easy for people up there to know that that should be called a certain thing.
Exactly.
But down in the field, there's too much chaos, confusion, communication errors going on where they don't do the right thing. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More of your phone calls, more of your tweets on rules or procedures in the NFL that you'd like to see change to make the game better.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Well, it appears, Donald, that your former quarterback in Buffalo is now a former quarterback of the Jets as well. Ryan Fitzpatrick deal voids today, and it appears that that's exactly what will happen. I think no surprise here, but the Jets will not be bringing back Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, it's no surprise. It's no surprise to, I don't think, anyone in this country, or I'm sure it's not a surprise to him either. You know, it wasn't a surprise for Chan or Petullo or the rest of the offensive coaches either. You know, they kind of felt like this thing was coming down the pipe. And everything that happened even last year with them fighting Fitz on his contract for this past season, you knew with the season that he had that they weren't going to do anything moving forward.
No, and it's interesting. They're a very, very intriguing team with me as far as their quarterback situation. They've drafted a couple quarterbacks recently in Bryce Petty and in Christian Hackenberg. Geno Smith is going to be a free agent. He's essentially exactly in the same boat as EJ Manuel is. Handful of starts in the league, same draft class. You know, he's had a very, you know, up and down type of career where he's had some games that look pretty good, but majority of it have been average or worse. And now you're going to probably move on from him. Look for somebody else. Now you have no Ryan Fitzpatrick. So I don't know what they're going to do there. There's a lot of rumors about Jay Cutler possibly going there. One of his former position coaches or coordinators now is a position coach there. There's been rumors they're going to get out of the Tony Romo sweepstakes. The Jets are an interesting team because I think there is some talent there, but they're a very aging roster, and their window is very short right now. And the only kind of quarterback that makes sense for me to them is an older guy, like a Romo or a Cutler. I don't know if you're really doing any justice to starting a young guy behind an aging roster that might get like one crack at trying to make the playoffs here.
Yeah, and this is why we talk about with quarterback position, it's not an exact science. Like, they've taken guys who they think could be the guy, and it doesn't work out. And it happens for teams like that all the time. Teams spend, years trying to find a franchise quarterback. Mm-hmm. Years trying. And then when you find one, that guy will take you on a run if you put the right pieces around him. But how many teams in this league can you say, like, man, they haven't had a franchise quarterback in I don't know how many years?
Well, they're one of them. And what's interesting about them is you think their best players are their oldest players.
Yeah.
Brandon Marshall, I mean, not Fitz anymore, but Fitz, right? Brandon Marshall, even Matt Forte is longer in the tooth. Darrell Revis, Nick right. Mangold, Eric Decker's getting up there.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a young team in New York. And I would say they would be, to me, if I looked at any team in this league and said, you just need to blow it up and rebuild, I think the Jets are number one on that list. I don't think they're going to, though. That's why that, hey, if they go out and get Cutler or Romo, they'll get one swing at maybe making the playoffs here. I think that's about it. But other than that, I think they're looking for a long at least maybe not a long rebuild, but sometime down the road here in the next couple of years, definitely a tear it down and start over.
I think, you know, that's another team that has guys on major, huge contracts
yep.
that have not panned out for them. Guys like Muhammad Wilkerson mm-hmm. and that they just paid, that they can't even get out of the contracts because they just paid these guys like last year. You know, and so these guys have been problems in the locker room, problems around the team, you know, and you can't have that. So, yeah, they probably should. Sheldon Richardson, right. You probably should rebuild that entire – blow the whole thing up and rebuild. The problem is that when you do that, like, they're not giving the coach that time to do that, you know. And so
right.
that's why he's like, I'm not rebuilding.
No doubt.
I got to win now.
It's a weird timeline there between everybody. The coach probably has 1 year left to win.
Right.
But at the same time, are you going to give him a Christian Hackenberg or a Bryce Petty? No way. But you invested in quarterbacks with them? Are you going to draft a young quarterback? Are you going to go a Trubisky or a Deshaun Watson in the first round? I think the Jets are in a very weird spot for them. Let's go out to Jeff to finish up this hour on the phone lines. Jeff in Jamestown. Jeff, do you know Jay Harris,
Jay
our producer?
Harris. No, I don't.
Okay, well, everybody down in Jamestown knows Jay. That's why we ask.
Yeah.
I want to tell Donald that there's more than 10 people that live in Jamestown.
Nice. Thank you. You heard that the other day. Thank you. Good job. Go ahead, man. You're on the air. What's up?
I just want to tell Donald that there's more than 10 people that live in Jamestown.
Yes, we just heard that part of it. Thank you very much. He heard that. He's laughing.
Hey, any rules in the NFL you'd like to see changed?
Yeah, I'd like them to move the kickoff back 5 yards where it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you want to do that, though?
Well, because I think that's an important part of the game, and it's like the kickers aren't taking any advantage of pooching it inside the five, and then if you're going to get hurt, you're going to get hurt. I had multiple concussions. I have traumatic brain injury from playing football, so...
Well, all right. Thank you. No, sorry to hear about that, by the way. Sorry to hear that. But I am not in favor of necessarily moving it back. I understand, but I think this league is going more towards – I shouldn't say I'm not in favor of it. It's not going to happen. The league's going more towards eliminating
right.
kickoffs.
They're trying. I mean, every year we talk about
it.
If they
moved it back,
kickoffs,
I wouldn't care.
I wouldn't care either. Now just teams are just pooching it down into – you know, teams are going to find a way to still make it a play
right.
until they just say we're going to eliminate the entire play. But if you eliminate the entire play, I mean, it just won't be football. That would be weird to me.
If they do eliminate kickoffs, there is a suggestion on what to do, though, after touchdowns. And we'll
talk
about that when we come back, all right? So 803-0550, 888-550-2550, Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones. I got an hour left here sitting in for Murph, so give a call here, and then we'll head on out of here on a Friday.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Well, the Sabres did not have a comeback in them last night, just like they did against San Jose. They did not against Anaheim last night. 5-2, the final score. They lose at home to the Anaheim Ducks. They're at Toronto tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Pregame on the radio on WGR Sports Radio 550 begins at 6, of course. The Bills have finalized their coaching staff. Sean McDermott has 3 assistants that he hires. You can find them at BuffaloBills.com or WGR550.com. The complete list of the 26 coaches is there. The only position/coordinator coach to have been retained is Danny Crossman. Otherwise, the strength and conditioning staff pretty much has remained intact, and Laura Young remains on as an assistant to the head coach. Otherwise, brand new staff for the Bills. Tiger has pulled out of the next two tournaments, including the Genesis Open and the Honda Classic, due to back spasms. And tonight, national TV, center stage for the Canisius Golden Griffins and the Niagara Purple Eagles. They will play at the Kessler Center at 9 p.m. Niagara won the first meeting up in Niagara, and now they will play at Canisius in a big conference matchup. That is a look at your sports headlines. Duke in North Carolina last night. Duke winds up winning. Do you hate Duke? Do you like Duke?
I hate him. I hate him.
How about North Carolina?
North Carolina, I'm cool with North Carolina. Yeah, I'm cool with North Carolina. Duke has just always had that mystique of a certain type of player that they
noses
like to
in
bring
the air,
right.
Looking down on everybody.
Right, you know, and it's been said by a lot of different people that they only recruit a certain type of player.
Did you ever watch the it's not really a 30 for 30, but it should be, about the Fab Five? You ever watch the
it's
Fab
like a
Five
15 for 15.
It's amazing.
Okay. Yeah, I did. And they talked about Duke a lot there, you know, and it's still like that. Like, they recruit certain types of guys. You know, they're not going to go into an inner city and get a kid from an inner city. Now, people will say, well, they went in and got Kyrie Irving from the inner city of New Jersey, and they did that, but – more times than not, they will not go in and get that
kid. Chris Webber, who's from Detroit, talked a lot about that because he wound up going to Michigan, and that was part of the story. But that is partly why they're very polarizing as a school, no doubt about it. But I'm not a Duke hater. I do like Coach K, though. I think he's amazing.
I mean, he gets it done.
And he gets it done.
He gets it done. But, you know, you have kids like Grayson Allen, and I don't want to come down because these are kids still. Yeah. But, you know, the things that he's done.
He's gotten away with,
yeah. You know, and if that was somebody else on any other team, he might not still be playing.
No,
he might have suspended
right.
him for the entire year.
Yeah, but that is a great rivalry, though, Donald, Duke and North Carolina.
Oh, it's a great
rivalry. Would you love to go to that sometime, whether it be at Cameron or at Chapel Hill?
I would love to go to a game at Cameron Indoor.
It'd be amazing, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Chapel Hill is the mystique there is crazy.
Right.
But the Cameron crazies, like, I would love to be there just to hear it. And to be honest with you, I love this. Like, it's like the Patriots. Like, I would love – to see Tom Brady's his skill set diminish, but him still playing for the Patriots. Like, that's something you want to see. Duke, I would love to be at a game, but see that place go quiet because they're losing.
I just got a heads up. It's at 8 o'clock tonight because it's on national TV. It's at 8 o'clock, not at 9 o'clock. Got moved for TV. So it is the Niagara-Canisius game is at 8 tonight, not at 9 tonight. So my apologies on that. I didn't realize when I looked at the schedule it was 9, but it was moved because of TV purposes. So thank you very much. I actually called play-by-play of the game they played up at Niagara, and it was a great atmosphere. It's going to be like that tonight, rocking at the Kessler Center as well. So a lot of college basketball fans out there, Friday night, if you're looking for something to do, Donald, that's a great thing to do tonight. If you're looking for something to do out there.
I'll be going out to New Jersey.
And you'll be headed back to see the family. How's the family in the weather right now? Snowmageddon?
You know, it's good. It stopped yesterday about 4 o'clock, yesterday afternoon. And so everybody was – the school systems, they all had, like, delayed openings, so they were all happy about that. But it's fine now.
All right, 803-0550, 888-550-2550. You mentioned earlier, and I didn't give you a chance to comment, coaches combine. What is a coaches combine? How would you work this? What do you mean by that?
So it's really like they need training for coaches. They need to, especially coaches that want to be head coaches. If you want to be a head coach or you want to be a coordinator, well, they should put you through a combine. And I didn't come up with this. We actually had a guest who came up with this. A couple weeks ago, a former player, you might have heard of him. His name is Dominique Foxworth.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that said he felt like they should have a coach's combine. Really what it is, coaches that want to be head coaches possibly one day, you go to this place where all of the organizations come, and they watch you, and they put you through these tests. Like, when, you know, would you throw a challenge flag here? Would you call a timeout here? You know, like, there's a bunch of different tests that they can put coaches through just like they put the players through. Like,
they don't have to run the 40.
They don't have to run – no, you definitely don't have to run the 40. But maybe they should do something to see if you can run the sideline,
gotcha,
right?
Yeah, right.
Like, how fast can you run up the sideline with your players if they're running for a touchdown?
How would you work the official? Do it to me right now.
I'm telling you. Like, they need to work on all of that stuff.
Right.
You know, the officials have training. The players have training. Coaches need to have training.
But you know why? I tell you why I like the idea. Everything you say is great. I'll give you another reason why I like it. It's because – there is an unofficial coaches combine. It's called the Senior Bowl. All these coaches around the country who want jobs, they go to the Senior Bowl, and they're all just politicking for jobs at the Senior Bowl. I've been around coaches my whole life pretty much, and I can tell you, when you get coaches together for a clinic or a college type of game or situation, they're all just politicking with resumes, trying to get jobs, trying to move up. And it's a meat market. It's incredible. And it's not necessarily – a conducive thing for a lot of people who are really trying the right way to do it and trying to work their way, who can't necessarily get into a room with somebody. So this would be an opportunity to have that more of a formal setting, a schedule. Hey, who's there? Let's go through the list. These are the guys we want to talk to while we're there, or ladies, mm-hmm. that we want to talk to. Let's set it up with their agents. Let's get in a room and let's talk to them. Not just a free-for-all meat market of people being all around and saying, here's my resume, come hire me.
Right.
And some guy who's maybe coaching his team in the playoffs can't be there, or some high school guy who wants to get in college can't afford to go to the Senior Bowl.
You know, the thing is for me, the biggest thing is to have an event like this, it evens the playing field. Right?
Right.
So it somewhat evens the playing field, because at the end of the day, the organization and the head man still wants to hire their own staff, right? But when you have something like this, it allows organizations to see, wow, this coach actually is good, you know? Instead of right now, coaches are being hired, they're being recycled, you know? They just keep getting hired by their friends. And because of that, there's never a chance, an opportunity for a young guy, a Sean McDermott, to get an opportunity to be a head coach in this league, you know? And so you need to have an event like this so the organizations, the teams can see the new guys that are coming up and be impressed by new guys, and they decide, we saw this guy at this coach's event last year,
yep.
and this is the guy we want to hire as the head coach instead of, you know, a certain guy like a Chip Kelly gets fired and then gets hired like the next day by another team. Like, that's, come on, man. Give somebody else an opportunity.
803-0550, 888-550-2550. The number is to call here if you want to make some suggestions here. Let's go to Greg in Rochester. What's going on, Greg?
Hey, I got one. But first, Donald, if, you know, Duke could recruit a certain type of player, I'd keep recruiting that player. They're the premier college basketball team in the country. So they're doing something right. I would keep doing it if I was them, right? I mean, if you've got a formula that works, you stick with it.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have a formula that's been working for them, and they won a championship, what, 2 years ago or something like that?
I think they might won many. I think his point, though, is, and you can speak, Donald, I think his point is because they have only a certain type of player, you either like to have that type of player or not like to have that type of player, and it's like being the Yankees.
Yeah.
The Yankees, you could either love them or hate them usually, and Duke has a certain persona that is the type of player you either love or you hate.
Greg, you got to look at it from a player's perspective and not just a fan's perspective. You know, when you're a player,
fan,
I understand that you're a fan, but just look at it from a different perspective. Like look at it from the outside looking in, let's just say. If you were a player and you were being recruited and you thought like, man, Duke will never recruit me because I come from this area, how would you feel?
I don't think they'd totally wipe people off their boards based on where they're from. I just don't believe that. I think they look for a certain type of player, not where that player's from. Maybe I'm wrong, but
no, we'll see. I don't know. It's an interesting. Like I said, if you watch the Fab Five documentary, they get into this a lot. But I'll tell you, at the end, those guys, the five guys, and Chris Webber and Jalen Rose and Jimmy Jackson and all those guys and Howard, they at the end, they had quite a bit of respect for Duke, though, in what they played. And I think that's. You know, at the end of the day, because of what they do accomplish, that does wind up happening.
You got to respect it.
No doubt about it. What's that, what else is on your mind, Greg?
My rule change. I this has been a pet peeve of mine forever. The NFL gets away with these red flag challenges flagged by the coaches, and then at the end of the game at a blown call, you blame the coaches for messing up the little stupid red flag in a split-second moment, and the NFL doesn't get blamed for having crappy refs and no policy for fixing it. So they take all the onus off themselves. All the criticisms for missing calls and blown calls and it should have happened, it all goes to the head coaches instead of the league for not fixing their own problem. It's ridiculous that coaches have to decide in a split second if it's a catch or not, or, ooh, this is a certain point of the game. I have to try to make this call, even though I don't know if it's going to happen or not. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You put a head coach, you put a referee in the booth who has quick access, who can look at the call. We all know when it should be challenged or not, regardless of if it's your team or the other team you're rooting against. You know when it's a close play and when it's the right time to do it. And those coaches should just push the button, look at it real quick, and make the determination without making the coaches and fans fight with, you know, inner team when the NFL was the one who blew the call. Their refs blew the call or made the right call. And I hate that stupid red flag thing.
You know what I hate about it, Greg? You know what I hate about it is even if the coach is right every time, he only gets a limited number. I mean, it's crazy, right? I mean, I keep being right. If you keep screwing me up and my team, I keep pointing it out that I'm right, and then you're going to take away my ability to keep doing that.
And then throwing in on a touchdown, like I seen a play where – you think a guy scores, but the umpire or the ref didn't say that he scored. You know, all scoring plays are reviewed. Shouldn't that be reviewed automatically? Because it's did he score or didn't he score? But because they called didn't, you got to throw the flag. I think there was a play in a playoff game where they didn't throw the flag on it where he could have scored because probably the coach probably thought that they were going to review it themselves. The whole system is jacked. Make it faster, make it right, and take it off these coaches and let the NFL, you know, defend their own call.
All right, Greg, thanks. Greg's fired up about Duke and the challenge flags. Baby.
Right. It was definitely. I look at it like this, and I've been saying this, especially really, I've always felt like this, but it really came out after the Seattle game and what happened in that game with the refs, and they're blown like four or five calls on one play, right? And so I feel like, first of all, the refs should be full-time, and we talked about this last week. I feel like the refs should have the same amount of pressure on them as everybody else. We had Peter King on, and he asked us, do we feel like the refs should be under that much pressure? And I was like, yeah, they should be under that much pressure. They get paid to call a game where there's a lot on the line. And if you're the one that blows a call, and it can cost a coach or a player his job because of a blown call. Now, obviously, listen, one play doesn't change the – like, you obviously – you lost the game because you lost the game. But if there's one major play where you totally mess it up and then you do this on a regular basis, or, you know, you're actually blowing games for teams and you're getting coaches fired and you don't have to have any pressure on you, I just don't – that I don't agree with. I feel like referees need to be full-time. If you miss a certain amount of calls, guess what? You get fired like everybody else gets fired. And you can go back to your industry and whatever it is that you decided to leave to become a ref. Go back and be a doctor because you couldn't cut it as a ref. Just like the coaches, if you can't cut it as a head coach, you get fired. If you can't cut it as a player, you get fired. Everybody in this league, if you can't cut it as a GM, you get fired. The only people that don't get fired are the owners.
Doesn't mean, though, that if you miss a call, one call, you should be fired at all. Not like if you drop a pass, you shouldn't necessarily get cut.
Right.
But human error is part of the game. But once it happens and you're not reliable enough,
right?
Hey, sorry, we got to move on. That's what teams do with players and coaches, as you said. Donald, I have a rule that I think you might like as a wide receiver, but here's the thing. I got to say this. Now, I used to always believe that they should do this, the NFL. But now that the rules have changed and favoring the offenses, I don't think they should do it as much. Now I'm like, they don't need to do this. But back when I was younger, I used to say, come on. My thought was always, it's so hard in this league. Like, now they've changed the rules so much to help offensive players, I don't think they need to do this. But if you really want to show the athleticism of players and the highlight reel catches and stuff like that, which I think this league is about entertaining, right?
Mm-hmm.
How about 1 foot down in college instead of two?
1 foot down. Yeah.
I mean, think of all the amazing catches we would get every week to run if we could only have 1 foot down to make a catch legal.
It makes
like
things
college.
A lot, like, to be honest with you, from a receiver, it makes things a lot easier if I only have to get 1 foot.
But
down.
I don't, now though, they've already made it way too easy for you guys because can't touch you, blow on you guys anymore, and there's a penalty. But I do think there's some validity to, if you went to 1 foot down instead of two, I get it, they're pros, and you should get 2 feet down, like this catch in the Super Bowl by Julio Jones, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. But all I'm telling you is, it's a league for entertainment. It's a league for wanting people to tune in and see incredible athletes do incredible things.
Right.
And if the rule was you only need 1 foot in bounds, you would see a lot more of that on a weekly basis, people jaw-dropping watching some of these guys do these things.
You're right. It's, for me, it would just make things a lot easier for the wide receivers. And people already say it's too easy for wide receivers.
Right, I know. So that's the issue I have
that
now.
That would just be like, man, they just want wide receivers to be able to just run everything, you know?
And
that's right. We are the part that everybody comes to see. People come to see the wide receivers make catches, score touchdowns, and dance in the end zone like Antonio Brown does, all right? So don't be haters out there, the Marlon Kerners of the world. Don't be haters. Just allow us to do what we do.
The divas, that's what they are. You heard it right here. Jonathan in North Buffalo, what's up, buddy?
I just had a couple thoughts on, first of all, I'll apologize to the last caller because he wants to eliminate the ability for a coach to throw the little red bean bag. I'm advocating for the coach to have one more opportunity, and that is to challenge a face mask.
Hmm.
which they claim is not a challengeable call, and yet the league itself several years ago identified it as such a volatile play that they eliminated the five-yard version of it. It's only 15 now. And if it's that volatile a call, when it's missed, how come somebody can't go back and say, hang on a second, he was just tackled by the face?
Here's the problem, Jonathan, as I'm sure you could see. Where does it stop, though? If you're gonna have face masks, what about holding, a clear holding? Somebody held a guy from not getting to the quarterback, or a chop block or something. Like, where do you draw that line, and how do you determine that?
Yeah, and I guess I sort of anticipated that sort of example that you're giving with holding, and it is said that holding can be called on every play, but right. A face mask is only called when your hand is on somebody's face.
Okay. Yeah. I want to get Donald's thoughts on this about expanding what you might be able to look at with replay and challenges and flags and penalties.
Obviously, it would extend the game, make the game a little longer, and we all know they want to shorten the game. But there are times that I do feel like they need to be able to go back and look at something. You know, there needs to be a person in the booth that can say, listen, that's a face mask. You need to call that, you know, and allow that to happen, like in the Super Bowl when it should have been offsetting penalties. That is a blatant miss. And I understand that it's human error. People make mistakes. But there is way too much on the line. There's too much money on the line for there to not be a backup system.
I don't know how the game turns out if they call the face mask, which you just pointed out would have been offsetting. There were two face masks and a penalty against Atlanta on the same play. Everything would have offset. You would have had the play over. I don't know how the game would have turned out, but there's an argument to be made at that point in the game when it happened, Donald, that cost the Atlanta Falcons the Super Bowl.
Right.
I mean, that was a big deal, and it was in front of everybody. And as I pointed out earlier this week, how can the referee not see it?
Right.
The ball, it's not like it was away from the play. It was the play where the ball was.
The crazy thing is, like, players get tackled. Certain things happen. And if you're someone, a fan of the game, who watches the game all the time, like, you know, even watching in real time, like, that might have been a face mask. You might not be able to see if he grabbed the face mask or not. By the way that the player fell, you can say, that might have been a face mask.
Right.
That's what I said when it happened. I'm like, wait, that might have been a face mask. Then they showed a replay.
And you saw both.
And it's like, oh, that is a face mask right there on both guys. So it should be a penalty. So as a ref, you can see the same thing because you're trained to look at the actual play. And you're actually looking right at the play coming at you as the ref. So how do you miss it? I'm sorry.
I agree with you. Mike in a car, what do you think, Mike?
Hey, guys. I'm kind of in the middle of everything. I would love to see him. Like the CFL, you can challenge anything. There was a CFL championship game 2 years ago that the referees missed a blatant interference call in the end zone. It would have been the last play of the game. They end up getting the ball at the 1 yard line, and the other team wins the game because they missed a blatant call. But I would just like to say, you only get two. You get two challenges. You can challenge anything you want. You get two. So
it's
going to slow down the game. You're going to save them for plays that really make a difference. You're not going to use them on a holding call in the first quarter. You're going to use them on blatant. Because what are the biggest calls in the game? The missed penalties.
Hey, you're breaking up real bad, Mike. I know you're in your car, so we'll let you go drive. But challenge anything that guy held. There was a face mask there, but you only get two of those in a game.
I think you can keep it at, if you get the first one right, you get an extra one. But I do like the fact that challenge anything. And that's all you get. If you get the first one right, like, keep it the way it is, but you can challenge anything.
That's cool. We'll see. Let's go to Rich in Niagara Falls. What's up, Rich?
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good, thank you.
Hey, so what inspired me to call is pretty much everything you guys are saying today. I agree 100% with it. The thing that made me call right off the top of my head is when Sal said that the one-foot inbounds catch rule that college does in the NFL. I've been saying that forever. I couldn't agree more. But something that I think that I think college has right over the NFL, and I would love to see the NFL do, I would love to see what you guys think about it, but I think college does.
Oh, I cut him off. He's going to say overtime. I apologize. I'm so sorry. My finger hit the wrong button. I did not mean to do that, Rich, but I know what you're going to say.
Rich, he was gonna, a little trigger happy.
Yeah, I know. I'm like a Duke player. You know, I'm ready. I'm in there. I'm ready to go. Ready to trip somebody.
So what was he saying about
that? Overtime. I apologize for that. He was going to say overtime is what they do better in college. And we've touched on this, but just give your overall thoughts on why you don't like the college overtime, because I know you don't.
My biggest thing on the college overtime, listen, if you want to give both teams the ball, that's fine with me. It puts pressure on both offenses and defenses, right? It's totally fine with me. But you need to move the ball back. Don't just give them the ball at the 25-yard line, because that's too easy to score. That's why you'll see, you know, a million overtimes in college. Like, move the ball back and force them to have to go the entire field. Force that defense to stop that team. That's just my thought on
it. Yeah, I like the college overtime for college. It's okay. I mean, I wouldn't mind if they moved it back a little bit. I don't like it for the NFL. Mm-hmm. I don't. It just seems too easy to kick field goals, so I don't like it for the NFL. Sid in Buffalo. I will keep my hands away from the computer while you talk, Sid, so I don't cut you off. What's going on, man?
Hey, check this out, y'all. I'm wondering. There's a player on the practice squad that I've been following. He's a wide receiver, Ed Egan. I think this guy has the opportunity to really be something special. And I'm just wondering, why the Bills never gave him a chance to come up and play on a 53-man roster this past year?
I mean, I don't know. I never really had a chance to watch him in practice and see. Sal, you're at practice a little bit more than me, so he's probably seen him.
I don't know. I mean, he just looks pretty nondescript. I didn't notice anything that would give him a deserved shot at there. And by the way, when you're on the practice squad, any other team in the league can sign you. You're a free agent, mm-hmm. is what you are. And no one else has come calling. So it's not just the Bills. There's 32 teams in this league who have not put him on the 53-man roster. He actually was activated but never played in a game. He actually – and then he got cut and put back on the practice squad. So, I don't know. Not tall enough, not fast enough, doesn't run a good rough routes. I couldn't tell you that. I'm not his wide receivers position coach or the coach, the head coach or anything like that. All I could tell you is, obviously, it's not just the Bills, because 32 other teams have a chance to put him on the roster, and they haven't done that. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Got a lot more of these things to get to. We're going to talk playoffs, the format. Playoffs. The format. How about international games, where all that's going? Lots of procedural stuff with the NFL. Getting a lot of good feedback, phone calls and Twitter today, on what you would change about the game to make it better.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, back here on the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones. Donald, see the awards I got while you're away?
Yeah, I haven't received an award yet. Man, we
like
have
that?
Some applause.
These things are heavy, too, man. You like that?
I haven't received an
award.
That's
what they gave me for hosting the last 2 weeks with you. If anybody has to sit in here with you for 2 weeks, deserves an award, they said.
They deserve an award. That means Murph needs to get, like,
he needs
the
to
Heisman.
Have a lot
he
of
needs
them.
To have the Heisman, right?
This is pretty cool.
I haven't received an award yet. I think I need to go talk to some people upstairs and see what's going on.
Put these out here, man.
Maybe Christy Bonkles can make that happy.
Maybe, yeah. I'm going to put these out here. You can all marvel at my my brass award there that I got. It's nice. Take this home, put it on the shelf. Next to my bobblehead. I have a bobblehead of me. Somebody made one for me. Yes. It's pretty cool.
How big is the head, though?
And pretty big, just like mine, you know. But
does it have a goatee?
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. Yes. And he's actually just dressed like me now. He's got a jacket with a white shirt and no tie on. And when I first got the bobblehead, my wife would record herself asking questions like, are you going to give me money? And hit it, yes. Are you going to do the laundry? Yes. And said, this is what your bobblehead said, so you got to do it. You know, but I do have a bobblehead.
They should. The next phase of your bobblehead should have, like, a voice recorder, right?
Yeah.
And the most common thing that it should say is, hey, buddy.
I say that a lot. They give me a lot of garbage here down here at One Bills Drive on these sets for saying, hey, buddy, a lot. I see people and I go, hey, buddy. Hey, buddy. I mean, that's the way I talk. That's the way I talk. I say, hey, buddy.
Man.
You're right. You know that when you hit the button, it says, that was easy. That was easy. They have the easy button. Mm-hmm. You hit the button and say, hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
It'll replace the Sal Capaccio song, maybe.
Yeah.
But I do.
The name of your team should have been the Hey Buddies.
Hey Buddies,
not the Sal Capaccios.
The fighting Sal Capaccios out there in the North Buffalo
the
Recreational
fighting, hey,
Basketball League. The guy We're gonna try and go Tuesday night. It's Valentine's Day, so I know you'll be here though.
Yeah, I'll be here.
Right? So. Maybe we'll try and head up there and hit up.
You're the one that has to straighten all that stuff out.
I know, but I want you to go with me. Just say, hey, man.
Oh, so you're trying to use me to get out of your Valentine's Day stuff?
Oh no, but that's okay. My wife don't. She don't need me around on Valentine's Day. Just ask her. I can promise you that. 803-0550. Hey, so there are six teams that make the playoffs in the NFL every year. Four division winners, two wild cards,
right,
and the two top teams get a bye. There will be, I think, at some point, a seventh team added to each conference. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Are you okay with that?
I mean, I like it the way it is now. You know, I've been saying this all day. It's like a buzzword now, pressure. Like, listen, if you want to make it in the playoffs, win. Just win. Win your division. And if not, you need to win enough games to get in the six teams that make it in. I don't like it like hockey where it's like every team makes it in the playoffs. I don't like that. Basketball.
I know, right?
You have teams that virtually suck that make it in the playoffs, have losing records that make it in the playoffs because you have so many teams in the playoffs.
But you could have that in the NFL too. We just had it a couple of years ago. The Carolina Panthers won their division at 7-9.
Right. That maybe they need to fix that too.
I believe it was them at that year when they did that, right? But either way, that can't happen, and it does happen.
Maybe they should fix that too. I don't know how. I mean, you can still win the division at that record, but you shouldn't have a home game.
And they did have a home game because of it. I'm okay with a seventh playoff team, and it's not just because the Bills have missed 17 straight years, because, to be honest with you, they wouldn't make it anyway
right.
over that 17-year period, most of the years, if not all, with the rule. That's not why. I just think that, you know, it is hard enough when you have, like, you can have a really good year and you don't get invited to the tournament because you're in a weaker division. Right. You know, so maybe add an extra team and we'll see where that goes. So maybe there's a way you can play with the formula.
You mean a stronger division?
If a team is in the Patriots division,
right,
but they wind up winning like 10 games, they don't get in. But a team in the South goes in at 8-8, win the division because it's a weak division.
Right,
you know what I mean? It just doesn't seem right to me.
Right.
So maybe the two wild cards come from the West or the North, you know, and you, because of tiebreakers, you don't get in with 10 wins. But here are the Houston Texans at 8-8 because they won their division. So I don't know what. Maybe that goes to what you were saying. Maybe that's changing the divisional formula for the playoffs. But I think I'm okay with seven. And what I would do, Donald, is if you have seven teams make it, one gets a bye. All right? Only one, because then you'd have
everybody else to play.
And when you get rid of those three games, you have three teams advance, and then the top team plays the lowest seed still. So you could still do it like that. Then we would have six games on wild card weekend instead of four. Three on Saturday, three on Sunday.
You know, the NFL is all about more games.
It's all about the more games and money.
And money.
Selling the advertising.
Right.
No doubt about it. Hey, buddy, somebody just tweeted me. What is this? Oh, Kramer. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Hey, buddy, that's my new thing now. See what you did to me? Ty in Buffalo. What's going on, Ty?
How's it going there, guys?
Good, man. Good. Thanks.
I'm piggybacking off of the face mask, and I'm going to touch on the playoff picture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, go ahead.
Face mask. Like, offensive players, if they, like, say, for example, Adrian Peterson, who's a big proponent of this, stiff-arms a guy in the face, go ahead and keep on going, and he scores, they're not going to call that call.
Right.
And instead of going seven games, why don't they just go eight, and nobody has a bye, or if they take all the division winners, give them a bye, and have, like, extra games going that way so you keep it even.
How would you do – if you went eight, would you go the top two teams in each division no matter what, or would you do each division winner plus four wild cards?
It'd be four division winners and four wild cards.
Okay.
Have a good record. It's not like – it's like if you're 10 and 6, and somebody else's division is like 8-8, I would throw that division winner into a wild card and put a team that has a better record in with the division winners to keep all the top, like all the guys who got better records to keep them playing.
Yeah, I got what you're saying. I think then you're talking about seeding there. But, boy, if you go to eight, Donald, now you're talking half the conference makes the playoffs after
So you can have multiple teams with losing records in the playoffs. I think the league looks at it like the playoff system the way it is with just six teams making it in makes it more interesting. Right? And it makes it more interesting for the build-up to the playoffs and the teams that want to make it in. Because every year it's like, okay, these are the top six teams, and then you have like eight other teams that are like right on the fringe of being in, right? And so it makes it more interesting, which makes the league's ratings go up. Right. If they had eight teams from both conferences go in, it might not be as interesting, right? Because it's like, well, this team is 7-9, but they're right. They're going to end up making it in the playoffs.
It might make for lesser quality playoff football.
Right. It's just saturated. You know, for me, I'm like that with basketball, though. I mean, I don't watch hockey, but when you look at the basketball playoffs, and especially the Eastern Conference, it's like that team should not be in the playoffs. And I don't have any interest in watching the Cleveland Cavaliers versus whoever is the bottom seed of the East.
Right.
I have no interest in watching.
It's going to be a 4-0 sweep, most likely. Right. They might get lucky and win a game, but
right.
Otherwise we know what's going to happen there. Cole in – where are you calling from, Cole?
Stafford.
Stafford?
Yeah.
Where is that?
By Batavia, New York.
Okay, thank you very much. Didn't exactly know that. Thank you. What's up, man?
I had a couple of things that I liked. I remember from the XFL way back in the day, to decide who got the ball first or what, they did a 50-yard scramble, two players scramble for the ball at the 50-yard line.
Yeah, I attended an XFL game in Orlando.
So I'm really starting to question who you
– I did. What? I went to one of the first games ever, and what they did – he's right. Cole, what they did was they put the ball at, like, the midfield, and the guys started – I think it was 10 yards back, right, Cole?
So it's like dodgeball?
Yeah, no, they would blow a whistle, and whoever got that ball, you'd dive on the ball, you'd go after it. Whoever came up with it, like a fumble, that was the team that chose if they wanted to receive or kick.
See, I remember the XFL, obviously, and I watched it, but I don't remember that part of it. But that's like dodgeball. Like, you got to run at the ball,
right.
You get the ball first, or you're going to get hit. And
I think it was 10 yards, right, Cole?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing I liked was the 5-yard halo on a punt where you couldn't get within 5 yards of the punt. The returner until he touched the ball. I think it would help protect the punt returner, and you'd see a lot more, maybe some fun returns and stuff with it.
All right, no, that's interesting. Yeah. I understand about that. What about international games, Donald? Do you like where this is going? They play four games internationally, whether that's London, Mexico City. Again, next year you'll have the Raiders and Patriots in Mexico.
You know, I understand it from the league standpoint. I don't like it. I don't like it because I think it takes away from the fans that actually live here. And football really right now is an American sport. I mean, you want to watch games in another country, go up to Canada. If they want to have games in London or Europe, then start a league out there. You know?
Would you be okay with putting a team in London, which eventually they'd love to do?
I mean, I'm sure eventually they might do that, but I think that right there.
As a former player, I think most players would say no.
Because the travel and everything is just way too much. I mean, I didn't go with you guys when you went to London, 2 years ago? But everybody has told me, like, you hated that trip when you had to travel out there because you played the Bengals and then essentially had to go straight from the stadium to the airport and get on a flight and go out there.
Pretty much. That was the case. But for people like me, I didn't hate it. I mean, I liked being out there, but I could see from a player standpoint why it would be a problematic. I mean, you play that game, you're injured, you're banged up. All of a sudden, a few hours later, you're getting on a plane, you're going across
like a 7-hour flight, 7.5, 8-hour flight.
That's what it was. It was about that. And then afterwards, you know, you come back, you have the bye week after that, and all that stuff that goes on with it. But I would think that there'd be a lot of logistics to work out if you had a team over there. The pay, like, how do you do
that's
pay?
The biggest thing right there,
right?
You know, that was one of the main issues when we played in Canada. It was like, you know, you do your taxes in the NFL. You have to do your taxes in every state that you play in.
People don't know that, by the way. Tell that again.
Yeah, so when you play in the NFL, you do your taxes for every – if you have a game, obviously you do your taxes in 9 different states. Your home state and then 8 other places
where you
travel.
Do you do it, like, after you play each game? Or do you do it at the end of the year?
You do your taxes when everybody else does their taxes.
Oh, so you will actually do a tax return for California if you played a game in L.A.?
Right.
At the end of the year?
Exactly.
Even if you're for the Buffalo Bills?
Right. It's crazy.
But your agent should take care of that, right?
Well, you have to have a very good accountant that knows what he's doing or she's doing. But from Canada, now you're talking about being taxed in another country as well. And so logistically, it's just way too much. Like, it really is just way too much on the tax and bringing money back and all of that stuff. For me, I just look at it from the standpoint of traveling and the logistics on that side of it. It's just way too much for the players. But at the end of the day, we all know that the players don't matter. The league is going to do what it has to do to make money. I think they'll make it so that every team has a game out there before they say they're going to have a team out there.
Totally agree. That's what the goal is, I think. And then it brings us to bye weeks. Right now, the NFL gives one bye week per team. There was a time period for like 2 or 3 years where they gave 2 bye weeks per team. Maybe that would help if you're going to do the overseas thing. Do you need a bye week? Do you need more than one bye week? How do you like this way this goes?
You know, I think they would be doing too much. Like right now, they're still trying to figure out this Thursday night schedule.
Right.
And so now you want to add in every team playing out in London. So now you're trying to figure out, well, how do we schedule it with around bye week so that every team could play out in London and then schedule it around bye week so that every team could have a Thursday night game? That's just too much.
Yeah. There's too much. It's
like
too
pump
much
the brakes, hot boots.
Oh, nice. I like it. Took me 2 weeks to get that out of them. Tom and Clarence, what's up?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Hey, I'm talking about the NFL rule changes. You know, I know the extra point, they've moved back several yards. Was it 15 or something? Instead of 1 point, I don't know the percentage of missed extra points they've had this year. But what about making it 2 points if they make it?
Totally not in favor of that. You already have a chance to go for two, and it's about a 50-50 proposition at best because the percentage made of extra points is still around 90%, I believe, 85 to 90. So every team would simply kick and never go for two from the two-yard line.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does, but, you know, how many – you know, teams have gone.
Unless you want to make it 3 points by going for it from the two, I don't know.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be.
Now, here's the question. And Thomas, out there, our graphics guy, he actually asked me this. And he talked about, you know, the little line that they have out there from where they used to kick the extra points from?
Mm-hmm.
Where they spot the ball?
Yes.
Why is that line still there? Like, is it for anything else aside from spotting the
ball? You
mean
from the 2 yard line, 2.5?
Yeah.
That line? It's because that's where they put it for the 2 point conversions.
So they don't – I mean, the point of it is you don't know where to spot the ball for the two-point conversion. Like, just spot it. What are we talking about? It's the middle of the field. Like, right. He's got a pointless line on the field right now.
That makes a good point. All right. We'll take a timeout. We come back. There's a few things I haven't asked Donald all week, and we're kind of like weird questions. I want to learn about this guy a little bit because been here for 2 weeks, so you'll learn about him too when we come back. We'll wrap things up with the John Murphy
Show. You get too weird.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had former Redskins and Eagles return man specialist, number two all-time in all-purpose yards in the NFL, Brian Mitchell, on. And we learned a lot about Bills QB coach David Culley, who was his coach for quarterbacks when he played that position at Southwest Louisiana.
He's a very good coach, fair guy. You know, he's going to demand a lot from his quarterback. David played quarterback himself. He and David Lee were both quarterbacks in college at Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. And then you know, they went on and he did his thing. And he was at Southwest. Then he went to UTEP and then Texas A&M and ended up in Tampa to the Steelers. Ended up with the Eagles, Kansas City. Now he's there in Buffalo. And one thing I'll say about him, he made me a much better passer from high school to college. In high school, I threw the ball. In college, I began to pass it because of the different things he did. He stays on you. He's a fair coach. He's a good motivator.
Thanks a lot to Brian Mitchell for joining us here on the John Murphy Show. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones, our last few minutes here of the fortnight that I've been here for Murph. Just want to say, Donald, had a great 2 weeks with you, man. Really appreciate
fun,
it.
It's been fun.
I love it. I got a great crew out there. I tell these guys all the time, they're the best in the business. Jay Harris, J.J. Torito, Jeff Koltenak, Tom Hollander, George Blass, back at the station at WGR in Amherst. Of course, we have Ryan Gates, Brayton Wilson, and Derek Kramer doing a great job for us. Thank you very much to Mark Honan, Alan Davis, Mark Preisler, everybody who allows me to sit in this chair, and of course, especially thanks to John Murphy, keeping it warm for him. He'll be back on Monday. He does a great job and someone that I always aspire to be like, so I hope I kept the seat warm enough and did an admirable job for Murph, who'll be back next week.
It depends on how you're keeping the seat warm.
Right. That's a nice one. That's good. Donald, there you go. Murph. Murph will be back next week. Donald, I just read a story. Some guy, Steve something or other, had his name written down. I don't have it now.
Tasker?
He has, no. Okay. This guy has actually tracked and looked for the Loch Ness Monster for 21 years. He actually lives in a van near Loch Ness, and this is all he does every single day of his life. You know how he makes money? His only job is he makes clay animations of the Loch Ness Monster. It sells them on his website. My question to you is, do you believe in the Loch Ness Monster?
No. I mean, I don't believe in the Loch Ness Monster. I don't believe in ghosts.
You don't believe in ghosts at all? Bigfoot? No Bigfoot then? Nothing
no
like
Bigfoot,
that?
No Bigfoot, nothing like
you never,
that.
You ever seen a ghost?
No. But, I mean, I have been in the house, though, where something happens and you're like, did that just move? I don't know what that, maybe See? I had a drink or two in my system.
Maybe.
I don't know, but.
All right, Joe Montana says he refuses to call Tom Brady the best ever because he says you can't compare eras. Is this sour grapes or is this legitimate?
I think that's a legitimate argument. Mm-hmm. I do think that's a legitimate argument, and that's in any sport. You cannot compare eras, different athletes that you're playing against, different competition. So I think that's legit.
Who is the best individual in a team sport in history, at least that you've seen or you think?
The best individual in a team sport.
Yeah. Real quick, got like 10 seconds.
I think you got to go with Jordan.
I go with Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, see, I don't dominated. Watch hockey, so right. I couldn't tell you.
Great job. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate the awards. I'm going to take these, double fist them out. Thank you. Yes! Yes! Yes!